of the Arizona Board for Private Post-Secondary Education is called to order at 10 a.m. Could I just ask everyone on the phone to who's called in to please put your phones on mute? We're getting a lot of feedback. Thank you. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may go into executive session for the purpose of obtaining legal advice pursuant to ARS 3103A3 on any matter for the agenda. Folks on the phone, mute please. Board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may also go into executive session to discuss or consider records exempt from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state federal law, ARS 3810382. The board reserves the right to change the order of the agenda items with the exception of hearings. Ms. Anfield, request to change the order of the agenda.
Yes, Madam Chair, if possible, we need to have Harcum College heard prior to 12:30. Right back east.
You want to hold the plane for us?
How dare they?
Till tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
There's someone on the phone who is still not on mute. Hearing you shuffling your papers. Since this meeting is being recorded, I'll ask the board members and staff to introduce themselves for their record. Board members are also to state their name when making a motion, seconding a motion, and voting on issues.
Kevin LaMountain, Arizona State Board Staff.
Keith Blanchard, Board Staff.
Rachel Kearse, Board Staff.
Quan Tharp, Board Member.
Michael Romano, Board Member.
Trish Leonard, Board Member.
Dick Liebke, Board Member.
Dr. Jennifer Leick, Board Member.
Jerry Stanfield, Executive Director.
Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schenekberg, Attorney for the Board.
All right. Thank you, everyone. The audio recording of the August 22nd, 2019 meeting has been posted on the website and is the official record of the meeting. Ms. Stanfield, have you confirmed that the minutes are posted and are audible? All right, great. Are there any questions? Great. May I have a motion to approve the audio recording of the August 23rd, 2018?
So moved.
August
22nd, 2019. Moved.
All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Luebke and a second by Mr. Romano. All those in favor, by name, call vote, please.
Glenn Tharp, aye.
Michael Romano, aye.
Trish Leonard, aye.
Dick Liebke, aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, aye. All right, thank you. The first item on the agenda is Wazoo, a review, discussion, and possible action on proposed consent agreement. Those from school come forward to the table, please. We have someone new at the table. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, I'm Michael Rain with the Attorney General's Office, here to provide the board with independent legal advice if needed.
Great. Thank you very much. And those at the table?
Assistant Attorney General Frankie Schenekberg for the state.
Madam Chair, members of the board, Dave Garner, attorney for WASU, and with me is David Weems, Chief Operating Officer of WASU.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the board, on April 25th, 2019, the board denied the renewal of vocational program license and change of ownership app in the matter of Wazoo, based on concerns regarding Wazoo's financial responsibility and management capabilities. Wazoo timely requested a hearing on the denial of licensure in June of 2019, and since the request was filed by counsel for Wazoo, the state and Wazoo have reached an agreement through consent. That consent should have been provided for you in your materials and has been signed by the licensee, former licensee. To address the board's immediate concerns, Wazoo has removed Mr. Brent Richardson from the leadership team immediately following the board's decision and has agreed to maintain a $250,000 bond to protect the existing 21 students currently enrolled at Wazoo at the time of license denial. In exchange for withdrawing its request for hearing, Wazoo would be allowed to operate through April of 2020 for the purpose of teaching out its remaining 21 students. Wazoo has cooperated with the state thus far and has not altered its vocational program, which the board had found no issue with during the previous denial. And Wazoo has not enrolled any new students since prior to the board's decision. At this time, the state supports the adoption of the proposed consent agreement in order to protect the public and the students currently still in attendance at Wazoo. If the consent agreement is adopted today, Wazoo's disputed license would be reinstated through the end of this year. Wazoo would be required to file a new application for renewal next month in order to continue operations through April 30th as requested. If the board does not adopt the consent agreement today, a hearing will be scheduled for January of 2020, and Wazoo would likely be allowed to continue operations through the exhaustion of their appeals process, which would likely be March or April of next year, should the board uphold the denial at the hearing.
Did you folks want to make a statement?
Nothing to add, members of the board. We're in agreement with the summary that Ms. Shin Ekberg provided, and look forward to answering any questions you may have or moving forward with approval.
Has everyone had a chance to read the proposal? Have any questions?
Not about the proposal.
It was straightforward, and thank you for being so efficient in working through all of it. If no one has any questions, how you came, would you like to say something since you came to all the trouble of coming?
No, I mean, the board would have to take a vote to approve the consent agreement. I would just suggest that with that vote, you add a motion to vacate the hearing that's currently scheduled in January on the execution of the consent.
Okay, so the motion would be to accept the consent agreement and the motion to vacate request for a hearing.
Correct.
Based on that, I therefore, Quenthorpe, make a motion to accept the consent agreement as authored and to this board to vacate the hearing.
All right. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Mike Romano, second.
All right. We have a motion, second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Quenthorpe, aye.
Michael Romano, aye.
Your Leonard, aye.
Dick Liebke, aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, aye.
All right. Thank you. So moved. And again, thank you very much. You guys were very efficient in getting this done. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
There's two chairs in the front.
Oh, we have a standing room only meeting. This is pretty exciting, eh? So we have a very long agenda today. And while I know that you're all very excited to sit here for the day and listen to this, if you are farther in the agenda and you want to leave and come back, you are welcome to do that. If you're on the first half, please don't leave, because we will not hunt you down. We probably will break at, is one all right with everyone?
At what time?
One? Okay. We'll break for 20 minutes at 1 o'clock. So any of you who are on the second half of the agenda, if you wanted to leave and come back at 1:20, that's fine. If you want to stay, you're very welcome to. It's a learning experience and can be entertaining. You never know. All right, the next item on the agenda is the 2019, oh, did I skip? I did. Updates, Arizona Summit Law School. Nope.
No, complaint.
Complaint number.
I just want to move the agenda quickly.
I know.
Complaint for the Arizona School of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine. Anyone here from school?
Yes.
Am I come forward to the table? And Mr. Blanchard, would you like to give us a rundown?
Madam Chair, member of the State Board, complaint 19S005 was reviewed at two prior complaint committee meetings, one on March 29th, 2019, and the second review was on June 27th, 2019. Staff has given you both of those reports and all the documentation that was submitted in reference to the investigation. The overview is this student started the Master's of Acupuncture program in July 2018. She was terminated after concerns with the state of Washington and her naturopathic medical degree. The institution has submitted a updated response to what was required by the last complaint committee. Here to answer any of your questions from the institution is Joshua Hanum. Pronounce that right, Hanum?
Hanum, Hanum, it works.
President Susan Wagner, Financial Aid Director, and Cecilia Hillenbrand is not going to attend today, and on the phone is complainant L. M.
Yes, ma'am. So first, I'd like to thank the board for their patience in this matter on behalf of the student L. M. and for ASOM and. In guiding us to a resolution, we're well aware of having made. We had a couple of things going on. We had some turnover in staff at the beginning of this situation with LM, both in the president's position. I was coming into interim president at the time when this situation took place. And it represented a first for the school in a lot of ways. So We have a grievance policy in place, and we're aware that the main reason we are here is because that grievance policy was not followed as it should have been followed. So what we experienced as a school I made some notes on this. So in the span of 24 hours with LM, we had as an administrative team, we had a first complaint come in from a student that was verbal. Following that complaint, we had a second student come in with a verbal complaint regarding LM, regarding the classroom situation, regarding working with her as a peer. Then we had two students come in, so that's a third complaint, to voice a concern. Then we had a student concern warning that LM had, this is alleged, had told the student's neighbor, because the student's neighbor was a patient in our preceptorship class, had told the student's neighbor to stop taking his medication. That's consistent with LM's background, as we've come to learn. So that's the fourth. We had a request from a faculty member to either she needed to have a meeting or we needed to have a meeting with LM regarding a classroom situation. That was the fifth. And then we had a sixth article come in the following morning after we'd received these complaints and began to, Alex Holland, the president at the time, had begun to draft a letter. The next morning, we had an article come in regarding LM's background with Washington State and her naturopathic license. So if you're able to take a look at Alex Holland's letter, our attorney likes to call it a little bit wishy-washy. And that reason is because Alex began that letter as a warning, constructed it as a more thorough warning, and by the end of the letter had turned it into a dismissal, which, per our policy, was not the approach to have taken. So it went from warning, 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 we're already at six strikes, we're at seven strikes, dismissal. It was issued to LM on a Friday, not for lack of consideration. It was issued to, I was a registrar at the time, it was issued to LM at the end of a Friday where she had just left school. We had a Lake Havasu address for her on file, issued at the end of school on Friday. She had already left when the letter was completed, when the letter was signed. It was emailed to her, it was sent to her. She was notified, please don't return on Monday. So the idea was, this is the end of Friday. We know what this decision is. It's through the weekend. Please don't come back on Monday. So that was the rollout to the dismissal of LM. So since we've had our first two meetings, we have reconstructed our admissions policy to cover the gap that we had, which missed LM's background when she came into the school. We have also been through our dismissal policy and through our board approval of some adaptations into our dismissal policy to address if we come into a situation like this in the future. We're a small school, and it wasn't something that we were prepared to, that we would ever have fathomed that we would face. So now we have those interesting pieces in our policy that cover areas like this that people wonder, where did that come from? So
your first act as the new president of the school is to handle this situation.
Yeah.
I'm on fire, there you go. All right, LM, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to make a statement, please? And make sure you don't use your name, just use your initials.
Yes. All those noted things, strikes against me were like, I'm just really amazed because... anyways, everything was taken care of. I thought, when he said all those strikes against me, I realized I had one lady that's my same age that didn't like me. She had a vendetta against me, and she would complain if I said something in class, but she was equally as vociferous, and so anyhow. But I think that Josh overstated my strikes. I'm a very well liked person in that class, and I know that one lady didn't like me, but no one else. And as far as ever telling anybody to go off their meds, I have proof that did not happen. My two girlfriends wrote me letters. I can show you the letters. They were right next to me, and they said that whoever said that was not correct, and it's true. I mentioned to the patient, I said, if you ever want to go off, I said, you can possibly do that, but you're going to have the help of like a naturopath or a holistic doctor. So the clinician who heard that did not give the full information. So that's that. And then I'm a well-meaning, I'm a lovely, mature woman, loves people. I had a suspension in Washington, yes, but life goes on. I was helping cancer patients survive, and Washington happened to slap my hand because I gave someone some apricot kernels. My friends were all doing it, and we thought it was gray. We heard it was gray. Anyway, long story short, they were after me for 3 years. I didn't have any money to fight them. So they basically, the lawyer said, oh yeah, it's nothing. They'll never take your license for apricot kernels. Well, guess what? 2 weeks before Christmas, they said, you have to, we're coming after you, we're charging you. And I couldn't find a lawyer, and I didn't have any money. So I called the board, and I said, listen, what can I do? Well, you can just send in your notes, everything that you know. And I did, as I always did. And they just denied me and suspended me for 5 years. And I was in shock because I was always told it's nothing. And my friends were doing way crazier stuff than me. So I was in shock. I didn't have enough money to fight them. So I tried the appeal process, and they said they never got my appeal. Anyways, so it was just kind of a weird story. I'm a very good doctor. I have extreme testimonials for 20 plus years. I was a wonderful naturopath. I'm not a bad naturopath. Guess what? I did one thing wrong with apricot kernels, supposedly, and I never hurt anybody. The woman who turned me in, I saved her from colorectal cancer. It's just a weird thing. And you know what? And I'm not a victim-conscious person. But so when I came to Arizona, thinking, oh, my God, I just never finished my, because I started my Arizona, I started my acupuncture degree in Washington. I never finished it when I was doing the naturopathic program. This is back in 89 and 90, okay? I've been doing this forever. And I never had the money to finish my naturopath, my acupuncture program. So when I moved down to Arizona, I helped my dad out. He was sick. I found out about the acupuncture program in Tucson, and I thought, oh, this is awesome. I can maybe finish my acupuncture degree. So in good faith, I did their application. Susan was kind enough. She said, yeah, let's get you in on a temporary thing. I don't have all your paperwork. I got all my paperwork together, all my diplomas, all my certifications over to them. I filled out the applications. And I never once saw anything about licensing stuff. And I never even occurred to me because I was on suspension. And I never thought that would matter, that I was going to get education for acupuncture. And if it had, or if I had been asked, I certainly, absolutely would have said something. I would, you know, there no qualm about that. I had no issue. But nonetheless, I went in and I got accepted to the program. I'm an A student. I love the program. I love acupuncture and oriental medicine. And I was so, not ever having a warning, ever, ever, ever. In 11 weeks, 16 weeks, I think it was like 16 weeks, nothing. No one ever warned me that I was out loud in class or had any issues. No one. No one. So I think what happened is all this stuff happened in like within a week or a few days, and they must have just threw it all into the box and said she's a bad person. Well, I am not a bad person. I am a wonderful person and doctor. I'm a humanitarian, and I'm impoverished, basically, at this point. But you know what? All I wanted to do was have a fresh start at ASOM, and so when that happened to me, I was jolted. I was I was crying for weeks and weeks. I still kind of cry because I was booted out of something that was so wonderful for my spirit. The idea that I can finish my acupuncture degree and go forth and become an acupuncturist just enlivened me, and it made me feel like a person again. I was so happy. So when all this stuff just came down on me, I was appalled because I'm like, what did I do? You know, I mean, I honestly had to really look at that and thinking, oh my gosh, you know, I mean, I did speak up to one woman that, because she said chiropractic could kill you. And I raised my, I am a physician. I am a healthcare practitioner. So when someone says something that's totally out, I will raise my hand and I will say, you know, it's not correct. It's just not correct. What that woman, Celia Hildegard, said. And so I spoke up in class one time, give me a break. I just said that's not correct information. Chiropractic helps a lot of people. I said, you can't just say that it's going to sever your neck. I mean, so that was the one thing I probably shouldn't have done, but I did speak up because it was erroneous information. I am a healthcare practitioner, and all the other people in my classes didn't have any healthcare background whatsoever. And there was 8 other women. And, so I would at times ask some more deeper questions. Like, I want to know because I do have a background. And I should not be stamped because of the fact that I do know more. But that woman who spoke up against me, she was very jealous of me. I just turned 60. I look like I'm 40. Why? Because I'm a health freak. I take care of myself. The other 60-year-old in class, he is the opposite of me, and she never liked me. And I would come up to her and say, listen, I said, can I do something for you? You know, I was trying to befriend her. But anyways, I can't stop those people who obviously don't like that I'm intelligent. And yes, I will be assertive at times. But otherwise, there was no issue. And so for everything to have...
LM?
Yes, sorry.
Thank you. Yeah. I think that was probably a little more than we needed. I understand that you're distraught, but this isn't a meeting about you as a person. It's about whether the school followed their policies and took appropriate action, and they have admitted that they did not follow the process initially. Sounds like they were a bit overwhelmed by having so many complaints come at once, and they overreacted and immediately terminated. And understandably, that's not how the process should have been. Their right to terminate you is a separate matter. So I'd just like to ask the school a question now. After it was determined that you hadn't followed your policy at the time, did you then, what was the next step that you did with her?
So the next step, excuse me. The next step with LM was, lack of a better way to say this, was that, she reported this situation to the Department of Education. We also reported the situation to the Department of Education, spoke with the Department of Education regarding financial concerns with LM and what was the best approach, because she had initially asked when the situation had taken place. She said... there had been some email correspondence back and forth. Alex Holland had told her that we were not going to entertain the opportunity for her to appeal the situation, that we had overwhelming strikes and overwhelming evidence. So she said, basically, if you refund my tuition, okay, but otherwise I'm going to take it up with the State Board and Department of Education. So we said, okay, so we spoke to the Department of Education. We did go over through administration what we wanted to do with that, whether or not to entertain refunding her tuition. We decided to go with the Department of Education. We spoke to the Department of Education. We were cleared by the Department of Education, and then things came to the State Board. And in our first meeting,
our first meeting with this honorable board was a bit of a disaster. So we flubbed that meeting. Alex Holland was not there. I was interim president. I showed up to the meeting late. So we were an hour late for this meeting. And again, I actually initially had this to start this entire thing as an apology for that from the get-go. So we hit that piece. We basically showed up at the end of that meeting. The outcome of that meeting was we said very little. And we were asked to allow LM to reapply to the school. We did so. We put LM through policy to the T for reapplying to the school. We also had redone our admissions application before that. As soon as we had asked LM to leave, we began work on paying attention to our admissions process and what needed to happen there. So when she reapplied, she was subject to reapplication to the school as a brand new student. So when she came to the school, she came last minute. A lot of her stuff sort of came in after she got going. So this time we said, hey, we need all of this stuff. We need all of it up front. We need to see everything that you put on your application. We need to have an explanation for this on your application. We did have the question on there that says now, have you had, has your license been
suspended.
I have it actually right here. We have as a question, have you ever been subject to disciplinary action or had a professional license revoked, suspended, restricted, or denied for misconduct, dishonesty, public safety, or any cause that substantially relates to the duties or responsibilities of a healthcare practitioner? That's now the question on our admissions application. So she filled that out. She gave us information on it. We put her through readmission in that. Everything that is in her background was subject to review. We went into that as much as we could and ultimately decided we were not going to allow her to be readmitted into the school. And at the end of that, as a resolution, we sought a possible refund of her financial aid that she used toward her education. We had a reasonable amount of conflict at the school because there were a lot of people that felt like she'd been through an entire first quarter of schooling. Teachers had shown up and taught her master's level education through our curriculum. She'd been through that, grading, attendance, everything. So that was education paid for and dispersed. That's where we went back and forth on refunding. We ultimately decided that we were willing to refund financial aid to her for what she had allocated to the school. Any portion of financial aid she had taken for personal expenses was her own thing, but we would cover the school costs.
For both terms that she attended, the full and the partial?
I believe it was. It's $6,000 in total, so I think that would have been both terms.
It would have been, because we're a clock hour school, it would have been 364 hours.
The full amount from when she started?
Yeah. Yes, so it would have been. So we offered that as a resolution. She agreed to that resolution. Our attorney, Mr. Adrian Hall, who's not with us today, I believe, went back and forth with Keith, I think, on whether or not we were allowed to seek a resolution like that, and whether the state board was okay with us doing that. And during the week that Adrian took to get that approval, at the end of the week, LM said that she didn't want that as a resolution. So we had gone through acceptance of it at the beginning of the week to rejecting of it at the end of the week, and we came to the second board meeting.
So you had already offered her readmission, chose to not readmit her based on your current policies, and then you offered her the settlement of refunding tuitions paid.
Right. So readmission we did not offer. Readmission, we were asked to allow her to reapply by the board. We allowed her to reapply. We went through that process. We denied her readmission, and we offered the financial aid as a possible resolution.
After you went through that process.
After we went through that process.
I just want to make sure I have the timeline right.
Madam Chair, if I could just interrupt. As chair of the complaint committee and being part of this, I appreciate some of the description that's been provided here, but I think we've left out a couple things that I think are pertinent to the discussion here. Certainly the acknowledgement from the school of misses in the policy, that is very clear, so we appreciate that. When this comes right down to it, they didn't ever meet with the student, and They let her go. They terminated her. And that was the violation of the policy that you had written. As that persisted, the board did not ask you to allow her to appeal. We merely asked to follow the appeal process of the school from that standpoint. The explanation given at the time of her termination was that of because she lost her license in the state of Washington, she no longer qualified to go to school there. That was the reason they used for the termination. And during the first board meeting, it was determined that was not accurate. She absolutely could continue to apply to the school for that. At that time, the school tried to pepper it with more complaints that they never brought to the student's attention. Around that's the reason we terminated as well. Ultimately, they went back. They came back forward to us again. And if you listen to the recordings of that particular committee, what you will hear is that they first refused her financial aid to come back to school. And in their term, from what they shared, hoping she would go away, that's what they said, hoping she would go away, she didn't balk at that. And then they came back and said, we're going to terminate. So I think those are some important elements to keep in mind where the school continued to persist with poor decisions.
And just as a point of clarification, the reason they decided to dismiss her was because they believe that the revocation of her naturopath license in another state would have prevented her from licensure as an acupuncturist in Arizona. While that is not a certainty, because the board, the state acupuncture board, must review each application on its own merits, there is a possibility she could get denied, depending on what the facts of why she was revoked in the other state came forward. But that would have been an independent investigation by the board. And what I understood from the complaint committee was that the financial aid was at risk for the school because they could not admit a student who could not get a license in the state of Arizona. Am I correct in that?
Correct.
And so that was their concern was admitting her, trying to secure financial aid when they were not certain she could secure a license. So it's not a certainty that she would get denied an acupuncture license. It would just for certain go under review. She would not be rubber stamped a license in the state of Arizona. There would be a separate investigation. But that was the presumption that they were operating under, was that she would have been outright denied an acupuncture license in the state. So they could not in good conscience admit her into the program knowing that she could not get a license.
That was her position, and then they stated at the meeting they wanted her to go away, and they thought that would
that
do that.
That was the follow-up at the meeting after they had the proposals go back and forth. So.
Correct.
Do you have any other?
No, I agree with Mr. Romano. I was also at that meeting, the second meeting. Not sure it was handled the best it could be.
I think it's clear that the school didn't handle it correctly, which you sound like you understand that and you have hopefully learned from it. I think that the difficulty here is that the student is probably hoping that we can compel them to readmit her, and that isn't an option.
Not
that
our
we have.
Purpose.
Right. So,
or refund her to information that
which they offered, they already offered to do, so I'm assuming that that's still on the table.
Yeah, so if she finished one session, she started the next session, and then they refunded, when she was in the second session, they refunded when she was currently enrolled, refunded that to Title IV. They kept the first portion of the tuition.
Oh, I thought they just said they'd returned it all.
$6,000, which I don't think that covers that first portion of earned tuition that the school stated they earned.
We put that offer on the table for a period of time and then took the offer off. So one of the things that we did experience with LM through the entire situation, there was a lot of back and forth with emails, and there was, for us anyway, there was a lot of fluctuation in purpose as to what she wanted it began with, that she was willing to accept a refund of financial aid, of her financial aid obligation, and she wouldn't take things up with state board. And then once she was able to reapply, then she had said, because we had mentioned that there might still be some issues with licensure as you go forward, just so you know that in your reapplication, that even if you are reaccepted into the school, that there may be some issues with licensure as you go forward. There was a response that she wasn't
interested in. That was never said.
Excuse
never.
Me. Let them finish speaking, and then you'll have an opportunity.
There was a response that she wasn't okay. interested in licensure, and then a response that all she wanted to get was her license. So we had a lot of not really being able to put our finger on exactly what was her purpose or what was her intention in either seeking readmission into the school or being at the school in the first place, or for what she was going to do in the future. She had mentioned working, I think, on tribal grounds where she might not need a licensure. There was just a lot of different things. So in the end, we did work with the financial aid as a possible solution, which was accepted and then not accepted.
But based on what you're saying here, that's not that you're not willing to readmit her, so that's off the table. So we're trying to figure out what is my interpretation. We're trying to figure out what's left to be able to help resolve the issue.
Right. So I guess that would probably be a question for our attorney, who isn't here, Mr. Adrian Hall. We did have the $6,000 on there, and we did give it a deadline. We said, please respond by, because it was accepted, and then we went through that week of speaking with, making sure that it was clear that it could be accepted as a resolution. And then it was denied. We left it, I believe, until the following Monday. Please respond by Monday. And we had no response, so.
So just to be clear, this is $6,000 is not in totality what she paid for the first term out of financial aid?
No.
It's not. So what was the total of that thing, and where did we get $6,000 then? What was the total that she paid? So if you guys alleviated the second term where she was withdrawn, what was the total obligation that she had in the first term?
The amount that she paid towards tuition and fees was $6,655, and dispersed to the student was $3,486.
So I agree. Dispersed to the student is the student's obligation. I mean, that's they like they didn't pay it to you,
mm-hmm.
but the $6,600 is what she paid in tuition to the school.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Was any of that refunded?
No.
You said that the second module or whatever, the module she was dismissed from, that tuition was refunded? So this is the remaining balance that was paid to the school?
Do we have a ledger card in
there? I'm looking to see if there's one in the folder here.
I think what we're trying to get to is the fact that in good faith, yes, she did take courses in that first semester, let's just call it that. She did that with the intent she was going to complete a program. She was blindsided by a termination letter that even from our last meeting, it was clear from your own words that the former president was frustrated with her and also wanted her to go away. So I think in good faith, our guidance to the school is that you should give thought consideration to how you make that student whole from the tuition side that they started the program in, ultimately acknowledging the missteps and the policies and procedures and the persistent maybe misdirection in regards to working with that student over a period of time that has obviously broken down the trust between both parties. This has persisted for quite a while, right? Two committee meetings, now board meeting as well. And ultimately, I realize that the school's position is we put forward an offer, we put it on a clock, student didn't come back in time enough to accept that piece. I don't know if we can necessarily make a motion in regards to making a student whole on their tuition or not.
So, your options today are to dismiss the complaint, file a letter of concern, restrict the licensee's activities, or require restitution to the student or issue a civil penalty. The restitution to the student provision has been used in the past by this board to make the student whole through financial aid. They would have to make arrangements with financial aid to pay them directly instead of to the student. But the board does have the ability to issue that and have done it in the past and have been successful in the past making students whole.
Honestly, I think that it makes the most amount of sense. Having run schools, sometimes you have to learn the lessons and make the student whole and then fix your processes and policies.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you just have to learn, but it still affects someone else. And so I think that makes the most amount of sense is to, you know, provide restitution for the amount that the student took out financially and paid the school only. Mm-hmm. Stipends are the student's business.
And I commend you on changing the admissions screening process, because had you had that in place and this issue would have come up through her disclosure, you know, the motivation to have that in place is to have the right fit, mm-hmm. right, between school and student. It's not just to protect your school's reputation. It's to protect the consumer from wasting their time,
yeah.
and their money. In a civil court, she could actually probably put up a claim for the loss of her time that could have been better used making money somewhere. But right now, the only thing we have before us is should she be made whole. And had you had the process, as you do now, in place, she would not be out any money. She wouldn't have been a student. So you're on the right track because you've, as Dr. Leck has said, you know, it's a painful lesson in administration.
Ella, may I ask you, when they offered to refund your tuition, why did you choose not to accept that?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I even saw the email until Tuesday or like the day after. And then I emailed and I never got a response. But we had so much back and forth. That's been my whole thing. From the beginning, my complaint is pay me back or readmit me. If I had to choose, if readmission was my number one priority, of course, when they said, the board said, yes, let her try to come back into school, my heart was elated. And of course, in good faith, I reapplied and gave them all that information just to be just to go through the hurt again. But anyways, my whole intention was with the complaint, and I never brought him to court or sued him or anything like that. Of course, it didn't have any money, but what I intention was to get my money back. I had no idea until the first board meeting that I even had a chance to appeal to reapply to the school. So I was so excited. So my heart first wanted readmission. Like, let me have another chance, please. This was so sudden and crazy. Please. But then it was mixed with, well, you know, so I went there first. I'm like, well, wait, why are you, you know, I'm not going to, why do you want my money back if I'm going to get readmitted? So that email also came at a weird time where I was kind of being readmitted. But I'm like, well, wait a minute. Why do I want money back if I'm going to be readmitted? Because I'm going to have to be responsible for my student loans.
Okay.
So all along, it's been in good faith.
Hello?
Okay.
Okay. I think that explains. It wasn't that you were outright refusing the money. You just thought you had another option. So the timing
right.
sort of two ships. Okay, great. So.
Right. No, yeah.
So, Madam Chair, if I can make a motion.
Sure.
Okay. And I'd like to say I want to acknowledge again the school's taking ownership and changing their policies, because as we've received guidance, we can take action in regards to a civil penalty for not following those procedures. And there have been some historic challenges with the school in the past, albeit not within the last 5 years. And under your leadership, our hope is those will not continue and we'll have positive outcomes with student engagement. So ultimately, I'd like to make a motion that the school does make restitution to the student for their tuition.
Amount again, was that 6,000?
6,656. Full amount. Yeah, I'll make it.
6,655. May I ask a question?
Is that a current ledger card?
Not yet.
Yes. That's what went to that. Would the school be paying this back to federal financial aid or to the student?
No, federal financial aid.
Financial aid.
Yes. Sorry.
So I made the motion, I think.
I'll second that motion. Gwen Tharp.
Discussion from my part. I would like to issue a letter of concern. I realize that they are fixing things, but I think it should be a matter of record, making it clear that, you know, it's incumbent upon you to review your policies and see if they are in alignment with who it is you want to admit to your school. I understand that, you know, hadn't anticipated this situation coming up, so you've now changed your policies, and maybe other policies you have that perhaps should be refreshed. But I would like to amend the motion to include a letter of concern for a failure to have adequate management capability as determined by the board, a failure to follow published administrative policies, procedures, and fees of the education institution as determined by the board.
Chair, would this be under consent agreement since you're asking them to do
no.
These are non-disciplinary actions at this phase, so the board can actually issue an order in this case. The letter of concerns are not appealable. However, the restitution order you would have to.
I think there is some difference of opinion on the among board members of whether the restitution would be the amount of the tuition or the full amount of.
So with that motion, was there a second?
We had a second. We're in discussion.
Okay, so for discussion purposes, you can have a discussion.
Okay, so the question to clarify is, can the board require the school to make full restitution that would include the money that the student received for her own use to go to school?
The board has the ability to do that.
I believe I heard you correctly the first time, so. And that would be
so,
my.
That's the difference. Is that tuition and fees is a $66.55. Ms. Lupe is suggesting Title IV disbursement.
$10,250.
That's correct.
And the school, after fees, actually receives $10,142.
I would just ask Mr. Romano if he's of the mind to make a complete restitution to the student.
I am of that mind, so I'll amend the motion.
Okay, before we amend, if we continue the discussion,
I
don't know that I'm of that
I
mind.
Agree.
I realize that she spent her time there, but it sounds like there was an awful lot involved outside of the license in Washington. And it kind of goes back that threw that ball at her all at once, and she didn't have the opportunity to make a, you know, defend herself on it. But I have typically not asked for any stipend went to the student to be refunded as well.
Yeah, I don't agree that it should include a stipend that goes to the student. The school has nothing to do with that. They didn't receive any part of that. That has nothing to do with it. That's their right as a as a student who's receiving financial aid. So I'm still of the mindset that we return tuition and fees. That's what she paid.
Normally, I would agree with that statement. I just want to, again, state the fact that the school, even after not following their policies, continued to persist in breaking down that relationship over time with the student. All things being equal, if they would have followed their policy, the student would have at least had a chance to come before them and talk to them. They didn't even give her that opportunity and put a hand to her to say, we're not even going to consider you coming back to school, which created more time only for her then to bring it to the state board's attention, where it was determined that she could do that. And the school then continued to make poor decisions, persisting this situation along over a period of time, that I think there should be some consideration for that in this particular case of how the student was trying to come back in, ultimately did not receive that opportunity to do that, had to disrupt their life over a longer period of time with the intent of wanting to come back into school, only to find out later down the road that they're going to change their policies and not allow her to come in.
I would agree with you. I think the school has, the state board expects the schools to have their house in order so that these situations don't happen. You've come to see that you needed stronger screening for good reason. Had you had that in place, she wouldn't have had to take out any student loans to use any of that money for living expenses. Because of the failure of the school to have the right process in place from the get-go, she's out the money. To that end, I would still argue that we make her whole.
Thorpe, your opinion?
I agree with Dr. Lecht. I'm not of the mind to give her stipends back. I am the mind to give back to the school what was paid to the school.
There's a motion and a second on the table for restitution of $6,655 and a letter of concern. If the board would like to entertain a vote at this time and see what happens from there.
So if we make a motion or vote on the motions in front of us.
For the $6,655.
Then do those who want to have the stipend refunded as well, would that they make a separate motion on that?
No, it depends on the vote because right now we're sitting at $6,655. So if the majority rules that that is the motion that you're accepting, that is what they would have to pay back. There would be no second motion. If this motion fails, because there are more a majority that votes against it, then someone can entertain a second motion.
So just from a procedure standpoint, so I am amending my motion.
So if you would like to amend your motion to the higher amount, is that correct?
That is correct.
So you can amend your motion. For clarification, is it the 10,250 or the 10,142 that the school actually is that correct before the disbursement?
Correct.
I'll do the lower amount of the 10,000.
10,100.
Yeah.
Okay, so the motion has been amended. Is there a second to that amendment?
Second.
Call for the vote. If there's no further discussion,
I'll vote.
Gwen Thorpe, nay.
Mike Romano, aye.
Chris Leonard, nay.
Dick Lutke, aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, nay.
So the motion fails. Would anyone like to entertain a second motion?
I would make a motion that the amount of tuition, the full amount of tuition fees received by the school funded back to Title IV programs, and a letter of concern be sent for the failure to have adequate management capability as determined by the board and failure to follow published administrative policies, procedures, and fees at the educational institution as determined by the board.
As for the amount of $6,655, correct?
Yes, which the school can confirm that by producing a ledger.
Yes, we will need a ledger card from you.
Second.
Further discussion? All those in favor?
Gwen Thorpe, aye.
Mike Romano, nay.
Chris Leonard, aye.
Lupke, nay.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, aye.
Passes.
And truly, the lesson needs to be learned by the school. I think this is as fair as we can be, given what is going on. But obviously, we don't expect to see you in front of us again with complaints. So whatever your policy is, you need to follow it. If you don't want to follow the policy, then you need to amend it from a going forward basis.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. She will reach out to you.
Okay.
All right. That concludes your portion of the meeting today. Basically, what the board has ordered is for the school to pay back just the tuition and fees portion that you have obtained through financial aid. We'll send you some more information, okay?
It's almost 11, and we do have one change in the agenda, but I don't think that Arizona Summit Law School update will be very long. Okay, then we'll continue with that one. Is anyone on the phone or here in person for the Arizona Summit Law School? Ms. Stanfield, would you like to?
$200,000 to provide the student record electronically on a monthly basis. Provide that to you.
Thank you. I indicated at the August meeting, at the August meeting of this board, we have four students for whom we remain responsible. Currently, two of those students are actively enrolled as visiting students at Florida Coastal School of Law and are very much on track to graduate in May of 2020. They have both completed all of their experiential course requirements. They're taking some remaining required courses and as well as elective courses. The two other students, for their own personal reasons, have determined to sit out this current semester. One of them will be moving to Florida, we believe, to complete her final courses in residence at Florida Coastal School of Law, again, as a visiting student. The remaining student has indicated he is attempting to gain enrollment for the spring term at Arizona State University, Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law, as a visiting student. We have been counseling him to seek other options because we're relatively certain, based upon our history with ASU, that they are not going to accept him as a visitor. He has been, over the entire life of the teach-out, very difficult to communicate with, very unresponsive. We have counseled him with regard to the need to find a way to either complete his degree with Arizona Summit by the conclusion of the ABA-approved teach-out, which is the end of May of 2020, or to transfer to another school. And there are a couple of schools that would accept that we believe anyway, would accept all of the credits that he has earned. He's about 21 credits short right now, which would be virtually impossible for him to complete in one semester. But we are continuing to work with him, counsel him on the options, including the fact that if he chooses not to enroll in the spring, we will have to withdraw him. And we've provided him with his options under the federal closed school discharge regulations. In the meantime, we're also continuing, as we have throughout the teach-out, to actively work with alumni with regard to requests for transcripts, provision of replacement diplomas. One of our team has been meeting quite regularly with students to counsel them on career services counseling and helping them with job searches. This individual on our team has also been working actively with two students who are actually the three students who have been quite active with us ensure that they've have had externship opportunities here in the Phoenix area, and they have been successful with those. And we have everything in place to continue to work with all of the students between now and the end of the teach-out term in May. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board has.
I do have a question. Have we previously discussed the transcripts going to a transcript vendor for Arizona Summit? Because as we know, you're not going to order transcripts now necessarily. It's going to be over the life, so it could be 10 years from now. So it needs a transcript. That's not the board. Is that board staff having to do that, right? Or is it
correct?
Is a vendor doing it?
We still have. We've received them. Thank you very much for doing that on a consistent basis. They've been very good with communication to the students and to the state board with regards to that. You're using a vendor currently.
Yes.
And I guess that is a decision. Is that going to go? Or are you going to continue to fund that?
That's something that we're working on internally, and we're happy to let the board or the board staff know on whatever timetable that you would like to have a definitive answer on that.
Okay.
Because it's not just for the students now. I mean, that's an issue going to be for students ever.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right.
Understood.
So I don't even know if this exists, but it would make sense to me that if there was someone who hosted transcripts and replacement diplomas in perpetuity, you know, that.
That's us.
Well, that could.
Can I ask a quick question with.
Sure.
You have a sister school in Florida that a lot of your students are finishing their education at.
Correct.
Is it an option to have the educational records transferred to that sister school and have that sister school be responsible, or does that take away our responsibility to manage the Arizona students?
It's so we still have the responsibility of those records, period, forever, once the school officially closes. If they transfer the records to one of their sister schools, certainly the challenge would be, are we here again in a year or two or three, and that particular school may have an issue. I don't know. So they still live here. They will always live here. If we move to, for example, if we utilize Parchment, which we have for a number of other institutions, and that's a third-party provider, and that's something that we can have the conversation about. Most of the records are that I've requested from the school are in a format that Parchment could take into their system and utilize that. So that's a conversation that as we get closer to the conclusion of the teach out, that we would want to have a definitive plan from you.
Sure. Say January or February, does that work?
I'll reach out to you.
Okay.
The other concern, honestly, is the Florida school. Articles that have hit the press saying that they also are having some challenges. President has gone there to help, correct?
I am serving at this point as president of both schools, yes. Situation at Florida Coastal is there was a period of time where the school was found by the ABA to be out of compliance with the standards. In May, the ABA determined that the school is once again fully in compliance with the standards. The school at that same time had submitted an application for substantive change with the ABA to convert to not-for-profit status. That application was turned down by the Council of the Section of Legal Education at its August meeting. The application, I would suggest perhaps a more robust form, is on the November agenda for the council. Just the very fact of being found in compliance, I think, has provided both a morale boost as well as a student recruitment boost to the school. We believe that conversion to not-for-profit ultimately is the best path for the school. And are moving forward with that. The school, incidentally, had a very strong bar pass rate on the July bar exam, 71%, which was right about at the statewide rate in Florida, and is, interestingly enough, with a relatively small enrollment, currently ranked number one in the country in moot court competition.
So are you planning on remaining as the president? Is there for the Florida school, are you searching for another president? I'm concerned with your students who are currently, your Arizona students who were there, so they're kind of like still our responsibility for another year.
I think my role is at least in my eyes, not necessarily relevant to the well-being of the school, of the students that are Arizona Summit students. The school, Arizona Summit, as well as the cooperation of Florida Coastal, are fully committed to moving forward. It certainly at this point in time, I have no reason to believe that I will not continue to be the person in charge of the Arizona Summit process, and there's no indication at this point in time that any changes would be made at Florida Coastal. However, if the ABA approves the conversion to not-for-profit, the school would be operated by a not-for-profit foundation, 501c3 foundation. And the board of that foundation would, under the terms of the transaction agreement, have the right to either retain me as president or appoint a new president. I know the members of that board, and I suspect that they would want me to continue, but that's completely in their hands.
In the four students, the two that are currently in Florida, does it appear that they are on track to graduate in May?
Yes. Yep.
And then
they will each have, I believe, 10 or 11 credits spring term.
And the two that are in flux, you said one of them has too many credits to be able to do that in the term. So that means that in January, if they don't get accepted, he or she doesn't get accepted at ASU or anywhere else that he or she applies, then you would be terminating him at that point.
I think that is what we're going to have to do, yes, unfortunately.
If he opts to try to plow through it and take that many credits and wants to master, is that an option or is that just not possible?
It's not under ABA accreditation standards. Schools are not allowed to have students registered for more than 20% of the total degree credit load in any one term, and the student would be well above that 20%.
Fourth student
can complete, assuming that she does move to Florida, by taking, we offer an intercession in January, 2-week period. She would take an intercession course, and then she would take a full load, and that would be sufficient for her to graduate.
Anyone else have any other questions?
Do not have any.
When would the board like me to come back for next report?
January. Do you think you'll have enough information in January, or would it be this week, the third week of
January?
But yeah, by that time, because classes at Florida Coastal will start day after Martin Luther King Day, which will be ahead of that fourth week of January, and so we should have a pretty good picture. If certainly by the February meeting, we'll have a very clear picture.
And when you so we'll set you for the February meeting, and then check to see those students who are currently there, those two, that based on their progress this term, in case they have failures or something, will they still be on track to be able to graduate in May?
Right. Will do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. And then we will move up on the agenda to Arkham so that she can make her flight.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your flexibility. My name is Julia Ingersoll. I serve as the Executive Vice President at Harcum College, and I'm here today to make our proposal for our application to provide programming here in Arizona. We are applying to provide three different degree programs, the Allied Health Science Program, Occupational Therapy Assistant, and Physical Therapy Assistant. As the documents that we've provided reflect, there is a well-documented need for more professionals in those fields in the future here in Arizona. I anticipate a couple of questions that I thought would probably be best addressed in my opening statement. But before I go far into that, I just want to take a moment and thank Kevin LaMontagne, Terry Stanfield, and Keith Blanchard, who've been incredibly helpful and patient with me throughout this process. So, thank you. The questions that we anticipated you might have to do with finance and with the programs themselves. I have Dr. DeTemple, who's president of the college and also currently serving as CFO, available by phone to answer any in-depth questions that you might have regarding the finances. At this point, I just wanted to share with you that Harcum College has net assets in excess of $20 million and no debt. We had a decrease in our investment funds that's noted in the financial records, which represents a shifting of cash from investments to endowment. We shifted $1.2 million. In addition to being debt-free, the college has a line of credit that is infrequently used during summers for a month at a time before it's completely paid down, and that's available to us throughout the year, but has only been used during times where the cash flow is slowed down due to tuition schedules. Further evidence of the college's strong financial standing would be that we were recognized and recommended for the award of Nonprofit of the Year by our local Chamber of Commerce just 3 years ago. So I didn't know if you would want to have any particular questions with finances that Dr. DeTemple could address or to move on.
Mr. Sharp is the lead on this.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning still. Yeah. So I don't have financial questions, I think. You know, $20 million is pretty good for me.
Thank you.
Since we see people with negative $43 coming forward.
Okay.
It's good. I would also say that I felt like your application was well done. But I do want you to kind of take us through what I gathered there. Is it going to be a Boswell Hospital? And do you have an agreement with Grand Canyon? Can you kind of take us through this?
Correct. So what we have is two very successful programs, the occupational therapy assistant and the physical therapy assistant programs that we run from our main campus, which is about half an hour outside of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. And both of those programs have 100% licensure pass rates for graduates, and we love to grow those programs, but unfortunately...
Your application noted 90 and 99 point something, which is great, but I don't see 100%.
I apologize. I might have been referring to an earlier year than okay. was on that.
Excellent pass rates. I don't want to...
Yeah, we're very proud of that. Thank you. We're limited in our growth opportunities because of the area, in that there are a number of medical schools and bachelor's degree programs that we have to compete with for clinical space, which is required in each of the programs. So looking at other areas of the country in which there would be a need for continuing OTA and PTA professionals and not as much of a competition for clinical sites, we started to evaluate the Phoenix metropolitan area. And what we are planning to do, if the board approves, is to offer these programs in a hybrid model where they would have the classroom portion offered online and be available to anyone, but be focused on Phoenix, because then the students would be attending their laboratory spaces and clinical requirements here in Phoenix. And as you can see, we've done outreach to a number of different providers who have indicated that they'd be very interested in hosting our students for their clinical portions. And then we'd be working with the location at Grand Canyon University for the lab portion that the students would be doing about once a week for the PTA program and a little less frequently for the OTA program.
And in full disclosure, I have nothing to do with the lease agreement.
Yes, Dr. Lecht, I know you to be a doctor of integrity. I know you would have sat down.
Don't do space like that.
But the floor plan says Boswell. I'm confused. Is that Boswell Hospital we're talking about?
Yeah, it's right across from the Grand Canyon University classroom space that they've been using for a nursing program.
Yeah, the one out west? Okay.
Yeah, and that's where the laboratories would be held.
And you have this, I think I saw it, but you have a signed agreement with them? That you're
gonna... We have an MOU.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Exactly.
Okay, I just wanted to be clear on that. So, just so I'm understanding, so hybrid, they're going to do their didactic online.
Correct.
Out of Pennsylvania.
Correct.
And then will you have clinical instructors here hired?
Correct. We're in the process right now. We have individuals who are well qualified, who've already applied, and... we're waiting to get through this process today before going further with contracting for them.
Okay. Good.
So this will be an extension from the program in Pennsylvania, or it will be a freestanding program, CAPD, and the occupational therapy accreditors will see it as separate or as merely an extension from Pennsylvania?
We are in the process with both those organizations of applying for a substantive change that would allow us to have the programming here in Phoenix for the lab portion and the clinical portion while having the online portion be completely consistent with everything that we're doing in Pennsylvania that's already been developed.
Okay, so I think I interpret that to mean that you'll have the program director for PTA will reside in the Pennsylvania area.
Correct.
Have dual responsibility for a program there.
Yes.
And have responsibility here as well.
Yes.
And that'll be the same for OTA.
Correct.
Okay.
Can you, thank you, Mr. Wilke. I was trying to clarify that piece as well. So, Allied Health, you also have that. Why did you decide?
Yeah, okay, so
that?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. The Allied Health Science Program is designed to provide courses for students who want to apply for the Occupational Therapy Assistant Program or the Physical Therapy Assistant Program, but lack the qualifications to immediately enter those programs. So the Allied Health Science will give them a program where they can complete prerequisites and then transfer those courses and apply to transfer into the OTA or PTA program, or if they're not successful in transferring to the OTA or PTA program, being able to complete the Allied Health Science program and have the associate degree in Allied Health Science.
Was it really only 60 clock hours, the program length?
I believe so. For Allied Health Science?
Yeah.
Yes.
And occupational says 72 clock hours. That
correct. Correct.
That's a 2 weeks long?
A substantial difference. And I have the program directors.
Back up
I
a second.
Because 72, I have a PTA program at the school I happen to run, but you said 77 clock hours. That's less than 2 weeks long.
No, I think we were looking at credit hours.
I think you are too, but I'm just saying that your enrollment agreement is incorrect. So.
Okay, I can get that corrected.
Should be credit hours. Because I was going to.
Pretty intense program.
About intense, and then your price is up there too. I was going to say for less than a 2 week course, $53,200 is quite substantial.
It's all quick.
And I might have missed it in your application. How many students are you planning for each of the two programs?
I believe that we're looking at having 20 students to start, and then it would roll up with having the program start three times a year for each program.
So, again, I just got to clarify this piece because I'm having a hard time with it. So it's distance education. So the students will actually be enrolled out of the main campus, right?
Correct. They'll be Harkins.
Be a campus. I mean, they're Arizona students that just happen to go to a school in Pennsylvania via distance, right?
Correct. So what's unique about it is with a typical online program, it could be students from any place in the country. But for these particular programs that require clinical and laboratory, you have to have some boots on the ground, place that's identified and is clearly communicated to the applicants so that they know they'd be able to get to that location.
Which brings me to my next question.
Sure.
I live in Idaho. I want to come do a PTA program. So can I enroll, do it all from there, and then come down here and do my clinicals?
Exactly, which is one of the reasons that we focus as well in the Phoenix area because of the airport and accessibility to folks who are coming from more rural or other locations.
Madam Chair, Executive Director, so how does that affect?
Establish more of a physical presence in this particular application as opposed to other entities where there's clinicals and they're all over? I mean, not all over.
No, I understand that. I'm just wondering for consumer protection. If I'm giving an example, I cited I'm an Idaho student. Can I come to this board? Because I don't even go to a school that's here. I go to Pennsylvania. That just happens to do.
That's the question. If the student wants to go to the clinicals in Arizona,
will you be enrolling them as
you know, an Arizona enrollment agreement? Because the enrollment agreement you gave us that has the clock hours does have Pennsylvania on it.
Right. Correct. We would be doing that as an Arizona. We would be constructing a whole Arizona handbook that would have these documents for those students. And then any particular, any interested person, applicant, or student who would go to our website would be directed to all of the particular provisions for Arizona. So we'd be adding that to the website as well. Right now, if you were to look at our website, you would see that there's the main campus, and then we also do have a page for what we call our partnership sites, which are various locations throughout the Philadelphia metropolitan area where we also offer degree programs. And then we'd also have an Arizona page that would be the student through all of the provisions.
From the Department of Ed standpoint, are you going to be required to do an additional location with an address in Arizona, or is it still...
Our understanding is that it's all going to still be going through Pennsylvania, so it would not be considered additional.
And so, we're just trying to figure out, are they truly Arizona?
Right.
Correct. I mean, we wouldn't. They could move here, but it's the clinical portion is so infrequent. What we anticipate is people just flying in and flying out. Yeah. Yes, we are.
You are Sarah. You have Sarah or home state.
Regardless of where they're at, they come from. There's no campus here. That's my point. You know, that's,
but you're, teaching the lecture portion online.
Correct.
Then there's two other components to what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to teach somebody in a, say, physical therapy, how to do, say, even just a basic massage or range of motion, that comes before they go out to a clinical externship.
Correct. There's the three parts. There's the lab where they would be doing that in person.
So you are doing the lab here on the ground in Arizona.
Correct.
And then additionally hope to place them in a preceptorship, a clinical arrangement, with practitioners here in Arizona.
Correct. So the lab would be housed at the facility of Grand Canyon University.
It's not just merely going to do your clinical. They're actually doing hand. Yeah.
More so than if it was.
Some are here. It comes time. Yeah. Right.
So if someone makes a complaint, then staff would look at it and figure out whether it falls under us or we partner with Pennsylvania.
Here's my, I understand, Phil. So the letter of intent was they plan to offer two programs, associate degree in occupational therapy, an associate degree in physical therapy assistant.
There's Allied Health on here as well.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, it sounded like everything was going to be here based on that.
Well, in my, Madam Chair, Mr. Blanchard, I don't think the Allied Health, since it has non-clinical part, it's going to be a Pennsylvania program, so I don't even think that's of concern to us. Correct?
It's all online, then it would be under Sarah. It would then be under their Sarah office.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I believe that at least
a minimum of 2 months involved this board, but this board is still muted, right? We're muted. I can't.
So just to be clear, they do require licensing in Arizona. We're just trying to figure
absolutely
out.
We know. Absolutely. I'm not trying to go to the route that they don't require licensing. I'm just trying to figure out, should complaints come up, what we do, because it's a little bit unique.
Will they even be signing it at the year on an enrollment agreement?
I don't think so.
It doesn't sound like it.
Okay. No, I wanted...
This communication is so different from what we've been reviewing for 6 months, because the letter of intent states you're physically going to be here, the program's going to be offered here. Now it's the online portion is going to be at a... The only thing here is going to be the externships.
And lab.
The lab and the clinicals, yeah.
So they do have a presence here. That's not what I'm saying, but their enrollment agreement... Where I was going with this, the enrollment agreement doesn't necessarily say Arizona. Certainly, their catalog does make no mention of Arizona in it. So, to review,
yeah, I mean, she stated that.
There is a handbook. There is a Phoenix or an Arizona handbook,
and then we would do what was necessary to be compliant. My thought was that we need
would be add the location.
Yeah.
From your administrative.
So should we be advising them to, besides fixing it from clock hour to credit,
mm-hmm.
would the students still sign the Pennsylvania one and there would be just something in the materials?
Clarification on that.
Pardon?
Yeah, we need their clarification.
I'm asking, for us, though, if we're licensing them, would we require them to have an enrollment agreement that says Arizona?
I'm not super familiar with how you guys do externships.
No, there's not. That's my point. So
I don't believe
they're basically a Pennsylvania school that's going to have boots on the ground here because there's going to be a student because they've identified this, as I'm trying to paraphrase, as a market. That
correct.
Is, which is true. They've entered an MOU with Grand Canyon to use their space.
So it's essentially, once again, an administrative center that
right. But at no time are the students going to be, in my mind, considered to be Arizona students. They're attending. It'd be like if I'm attending in whatever school across a, you know.
On the enrollment agreement, couldn't they just add verbiage that says you're going to take your didactic online and you're going to do your physical component at this location and still use the same enrollment agreement if they're...
I like that suggestion. I don't know if that's our regs.
I think that's easier. I mean, that's still an Arizona enrollment agreement, but it's still the...
But they're not.
Would it be a
Pennsylvania? But I mean, no, that they acknowledge that they're taking their clinicals here, but they understand they're taking their didactic online. Just help us do which...
We're a consumer protection agency, so we're trying to figure
yes.
out if we're a little confused.
Yes, that's what I'm
probably going to be.
Yes.
So if they're actually enrolling at the Pennsylvania school and the degree is going to come from Pennsylvania school, but they're taking this big portion
yes.
here, then it seems that it does make sense that your enrollment agreement would be with the school in Pennsylvania, but you would have some reference so that it's clear in writing that the expectation is that they would be come to Arizona. The concern is if your enrollment agreement is just Pennsylvania, they may come back and say, hey, it was not made clear to me that I needed to go to Arizona. You know, I live in Wyoming.
Sure. And where I have some, you know, where further as I look at, like, medical school, say I go to Columbia Medical, but I'm coming out to Burroughs to do my residency and stuff. That doesn't make me a student in Arizona.
No, but residencies are a little bit different because they have a whole bunch of them all over, and the student chooses which one and they're accepted to it. Whereas this is, they're literally saying, we're setting up house in Arizona with this stuff. So that's why it seems like more formal that if your enrollment agreement was for Pennsylvania but has the reference that the expectation is they'll be doing it here. If they change their mind, they want to do it somewhere else, they would have to administratively work with you. We just want to make sure the students clearly know when they sign the enrollment agreement what they're getting.
Yeah, so we usually don't have an enrollment agreement. We created this form particularly for this process.
I figured he can advise you.
So my thought pattern was we're going to be marketing to students in Phoenix, talking about the location in Phoenix. This is an Arizona requirement, so we would do this to protect the Arizona student, the students who would be coming to Arizona to attend labs and clinicals.
Are you going to have administrative offices here?
We're going to have offices that would be housing people who would be working in the OTA and PTA programs. We've already, that would be part of the Grand Canyon University space. I just looked at that yesterday. There's
faculty, though?
Correct. Faculty and program directors and clinical coordinators.
Right, because
yes.
FA and program leadership and stuff is all going to still be handled out of the main campus.
Correct, correct. But we will have physical people here as well.
No, yes. I get that.
You know what? We're going to have, I know you flow here and everything, but here's the thing.
Sure.
This is very confusing, and I'm even worried about your Title IV, because if the student signs the Pennsylvania enrollment agreement, and then this is like, you know, classroom type thing, whatever the words that you're crediting, et cetera, would call it, that's one thing. If you're actually declaring it an Arizona campus, which would be an additional location, I just want to make sure that however we do this, it doesn't jeopardize the financial aid, that the student is enrolling as Arizona, and you don't have Arizona proof in the department, is there financial aid going to be in jeopardy? I think that we have to figure out like where everything falls to make sure we do this right for you.
Sure. No, I agree. We would not see this as a different campus. We don't see it as opening a campus.
It's an admin.
Yeah, so I think that makes a difference of how we do it, because
okay.
if you're signing an actual Arizona enrollment agreement, that just comes with a certain, you know, house
sure.
responsibilities and how everything rolls out with all the other agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
So are you suggesting that we will not have an Arizona enrollment agreement because it's not necessary and it would confuse the student?
If you're an admin center, no, but it's still the rub. Again, ma'am, is for me is that there are students, they're going to be Arizona constituents that are in there, and we're primarily, amongst a lot of things, we're primarily consumer protection. So
sure.
The line of questioning is not necessarily, like I said, you did a nice application, everything looks good, but I'm trying to figure out the entity and where that protection lies for them, as well as Madam Chair, who, you know, is a financial aid expert, wants to make sure that the Title IV funding
mm-hmm.
disrupted.
And it's odd how you say, you know, when you presented the information, it sounded very clear that you were going to have an additional location or branch, whatever you want to call it, here. And so that was what Ms. Blanchard went forward on, is thinking you were having a location here, and that's the path you took you on. But in asking these clarifying questions, it now sounds like it may be a little bit different, and we just don't want to blow it and not properly license you.
I understand. So what would be, if we went, what you were describing, the administrative site, what would that process be?
It's a lot less paperwork, I think. A lot less paperwork.
That's great.
But board staff, I think this matter would have to be tabled for board staff to do a little further investigation and get some more information on
maybe
how this falls. It sounds like it's an admin center, not a full new campus. That's a whole different packet. I don't think.
And you possibly could do that one over the phone without flying all the way out
yeah.
here.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know.
Combination of the.
But an admin center doesn't have instructors, doesn't
right.
have,
yeah,
doesn't
I don't
have
see
those
that is.
Kind
we're
of
gonna
things.
Have to, we're going to have to take, I'm going to have to sit down with Terry and take a look at this, because
an admin center would apply here.
I don't.
It's not. It's not. I don't think it's
so either.
Not a campus,
what is the
though?
Split between didactic and lab work versus, or sorry, didactic versus the lab and clinical credits? What's the difference?
May I ask, I've got folks on the phone who could answer this quite quickly. Is Jackie Kopeck there?
Hi, Julia.
Hi.
Jackie
Kopeck's our program director for physical therapy assisting.
And what do you need, our clinical hours?
The proportion of clinical versus didactic.
So clin-ed credits for PTA are 15 credits out of our total number of credits. And it's three clinical education classes.
That are fully being taught.
The
clinical education classes are clinical affiliations where each student is paired at a local clinical site for the duration of that experience.
So that's over. Is that over the course of a semester?
So the first clinical affiliation is 4 weeks at the end of the second semester, and then clinical affiliation 2 and 3 run back to back for 7 weeks each in the last semester of the coursework.
This isn't something where someone's going to just go.
They're
going to
live here and do
well,
this
that's
thing.
Not what she said. She said that.
No, but that's where I think the confusing part came in, like because it was, so I guess that's what we're trying to understand.
Yeah.
That's our problem.
I've,
if it's the Arizona residents Mm-hmm. And they are attending the Phoenix location for their clinicals.
Yes.
Sorry.
Then I think that's changing what it is that...
That we're talking about.
You're talking about someone from Idaho flying in to do this. That's more like a residency, which would be like a short term.
Can I just say something? Not like that. Welcome to Arizona.
I'm happy to be here.
Have good weather for you. Here's the thing. It's very complicated what you have going on.
Yes.
What was presented, we thought we were on one path based on your materials.
Sure.
Together, as they were, they appear to not actually represent truly what's happening.
Okay.
You're trying to be nefarious or anything.
Sure.
So we're going to have to go ahead and table this.
Okay.
And then it would behoove you to write out just a one-page clear explanation of exactly how you envision this to be, and then that will help them figure out how to make our rules fit. It sounds like you are going to have teachers here. You are going to have a physical presence
yes.
here. We just have to define what that physical presence is so we license you correctly.
Okay.
And then it would behoove you to then check with your accrediting and the feds after you get clarified here to make sure that you're properly set up with them, because the last thing you'd want is have students here taking out all these loans and then the Department of Ed says, well, that doesn't fall under your agreement. So just to be sure.
Yes.
So we're going to table it. And then
does that require a motion, Madam Chair?
Do I have it as a motion? No.
So then I'm going to have about a one-pager on each program because they're a little bit different,
if they're different
on exactly how to work. Okay, we got down in the weeds with all the forms, and I apologize if it wasn't as clear as it could have been.
That's all right. You're doing something a little bit different, and we welcome different. We just want to do it right.
Great.
Yeah, I think it was because, again, depending where it lands, if it does, yeah. It is an educational facility here, then there's got to be inclusion of Arizona in the enrollment agreement. There's got to be inclusion of Arizona in their catalog. There's got to be clear consumer information that they are attending school, you know.
If it comes out that way, that they actually are enrolled as Arizona, then that's one path you're on with all of your licensure, et cetera. If it ends up being that it's more as administrative center and the facilities for lab, et cetera. But, so we'll just table it. If you could write up that explanation first and get it to... Blanchard and Ms. Stanfield.
Sure.
And they'll review it. They'll discuss it with our wonderful attorney here and see if we can figure out how to properly get you set up. So if you just do that one-page thing, that will start the discussions going, and then we can figure out how to advise you.
Great. Okay. So would I be, would I expect to get advice at your next meeting?
Probably not. So they'll work with you and figure out what it is you need to submit. First, the decision of what is your category for us? Mm-hmm. And then they'll let you know what it is you need to do, and then they will schedule the next meeting. And I'm sure they'll give you as much as they can of bumping you the earliest possibility to get the process going for you, because I see
okay.
you want to start next spring.
The next one would not be, we do not have another board meeting until
yeah, January is the earliest.
Okay.
So it would be happy to get your part done as quick as possible so they can start getting their part done.
Okay, and then
establish what you are, and again, it sets the course on what kind of packet you give us.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
And it could be a lot of stuff you've already done. You'll just be able to put it into the
can slide into that. Yeah.
Could be a lot easier.
It would be easier.
That would be great. So we're looking at, right now, though, we wouldn't be able to get back until January. This would definitely require a board meeting to get whatever approvals necessary, just so I have an understanding of the timelines.
That's correct, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
It's up to you if you want to come back for in person, if you have staff here, come and you be on the phone, however you want to do it.
It's January, and I'm in Pennsylvania. I'll be back. Twist my arm. Okay, thank you. That's great.
I'll be happy to have you back.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. All right. The next item on the agenda. The accreditation action taken for Emory Brittle Aeronautical University.
Both you.
One again?
It's America.
Oh, man. I did. I keep skipping people. I want this day to go fast, apparently. So I'm sorry, College American people. I don't
skipping
mean to
try harder.
Yeah, just skipping right over you.
I second.
So I was going to have her come after College America, and then I got worried about the time, so I bumped it up.
All
rates.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You just introduce yourselves real quick.
Cindy Smith, the Director of Quality Assurance at Phoenix.
Christopher Brown, Campus Director of the Phoenix Campus.
Okay. Ms. Stanfield, would you like to explain what
this is
doing here? Sorry.
Eric Julin. Yes, Eric Julin. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of College America and the Center for Excellence in Higher Education.
All right. Thank you.
Chair, members of the board. At the October 2018 board meeting, the board considered complaint number 19-NS-002. The complaint was opened as a result of the September 26, 2018 ACC SC system-wide review and probation order to CEAG. CEAG owned several institutions to include our Phoenix and Flagstaff campuses of College America. The stipulated agreement would require a letter of credit in the amount of $929.64 to submit to the board the electronic copies of all educational records of students, submit a data catalog for both campuses, report quarterly before the board, and since that time in February, the board approved the regular educational program app with the same stipulations as stated above. In May, ACCSE continued the probation for system-wide review. Also, since that time, there was an article in the Inside Higher Ed that reported that CEAG was doing a restructuring and considering only online education. Mr. Julin can address it.
Great. Should I go now?
Yes, please.
Okay. Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the board, just a quick review. We received a system-wide probation, as you heard, back in September of 18. CEHE provided a comprehensive response to ACCSC in December of 2019. In April 25th, we provided information to your board to satisfy the requirements for the surety bond, the submission of the electronic records, and the updated catalog and enrollment agreements. On May 23rd, we provided a board update, and then I attended your board meeting. I think it was May 23rd or May 25th. I can't remember exactly. As reported, ACCSC reviewed that response and voted to continue the probation order with a limited number of items that they requested additional response from CEHE on. We provided that response to ACCSC on June 30th of 2019. Our expectation was that that would be reviewed by ACCSC at their August meeting and that we would receive some additional notification. To our knowledge, it was considered, but we have not received any additional notification from ACCSC at this point. So we are still, all of our institutions are under that continuing probation order. The college has provided the second batch of quarterly electronic records on August 8th. And then on September 16th, we responded to a request from the agency relative to some additional information related to the article that was mentioned in Inside Higher Ed. On October 1st, we provided an update report to the agency. And then on October 13th, pursuant to a request from the agency, we also provided a copy of the ACCSC teach-out plan that, while we are not presently teaching out our institutions, as part of the probation requirement, we were required to submit a teach-out plan for each of our locations, including the two in the state of Arizona, back in September of 2018 when the probation was first initiated. So we provided a copy of that report. We've also provided a copy of the notice that we've been using and providing to prospective students since September of last year to notify prospective students that the institution is on probation with ACCSC. So I'm available to take any questions. Where we stand right now is we are still on probation. We expect some notification from ACCSC, hopefully following, I believe, their meeting again in November. But that's where we stand at this point in time.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. So can you just give us a little bit of an update on how the school is doing just day-to-day operations? Are you meeting budgets, your expectations for the year?
Yeah, we are. We're actually on the Phoenix campus, we're a little bit of ahead, and the Flagstaff campus, I think we're a little bit below our budget. Overall, on a consolidated basis, CEHE is actually operating at a higher performance level than we had budgeted for fiscal year 2019. We're on a calendar fiscal year. As mentioned, we did make a strategic decision in September where we have temporarily, we are not accepting new enrollments at most of our ground campuses. Some of the ground campuses, we are still accepting new enrollments in a location in Utah, but the two locations in Arizona, we're not accepting new students. And the only structural change we made as a result of that is, you know, we're certainly not advertising and marketing for new on-ground enrollments in those markets. We're going through an evaluation and a strategic assessment whether we want to continue to offer fully on-ground face-to-face programs or whether we want to shift to some alternative models, one of which would be just providing distance ed programs, and our institutions are all approved with ACCSC to offer fully online programs, or we're considering and evaluating a model where we may shift to providing the majority of our programs where, you know, 80-90% of the curriculum is delivered online, and then we have a component in the physical campuses for the labs, the hands-on, those type of situations. But while we are going through that evaluation, we decided, you know, it wasn't appropriate to continue to enroll, you know, new students at this time into fully on-ground programs.
So are there any programs that you're licensed for that you no longer have classes going? In other words, have you mothballed any of your programs?
Not at this time. The populations that we had in programs, both at the Flagstaff and the Phoenix location, we are still providing all of the student services, career services, student support, academic programs at the time. We're just simply not enrolling new students right now.
Okay. And does your accreditor require that you have continuous enrollment in these programs that they've accredited?
No, not at this point. We actually met with our accrediting body in Virginia prior to making this announcement and informed them that we were temporarily going to just cease starting new populations or brand new students. We're still allowing re-enters into those programs for students who were formally enrolled or were working to get them back in school or that they choose to come back to school to complete their degree programs, but we're still providing all the coursework, all the student services. Everything is exactly the same. We're just not admitting new students right now.
Okay. Have you made those sorts of changes on your website and in your marketing materials that students? You have. Okay.
Yeah, we have, and we're not advertising or marketing. We've got a few legacy outdoor advertisements that we've been working through to bring those down. That was kind of the last piece that we had, but I believe all the on-ground websites have been modified, so it's clear that we're not accepting new enrollments right now at this point in time.
Okay, great. Ms. Smith, Mr. Brown, any comments?
Not at this time.
Okay. So, out of curiosity, just trying to appreciate this, and I was a little unclear. How long do you anticipate this evaluation to take place?
We're in the process right now of kind of going through that strategic review. We expect to have at least some initial ideas or thoughts that we're going to probably test out in some of our ground pro campuses starting the first of the year.
And I can totally appreciate the impact of the front end of the business, obviously, on the admission side and what that looks like. I'm just I'm recognizing you're not mothballing. Congratulations on working that into the whole conversation. Understanding.
Yeah, we're trying to do this. Trying to do this the right way, rather than the way we've sometimes seen it done in the past.
Yeah, I'm just trying to appreciate, I guess, at what point do you anticipate faculty support service adjustments based on a reduced student population, and how is that playing out with staff in regards to wondering, am I going to have a job at the beginning of the year? Are you not experiencing
Yeah, it's a great
anything?
Question. No, it's an absolutely fair question. I mean, luckily, CEHE as a total organization is in an extremely strong financial position where, you know, we can have colleges on, if you just looked at a financial operation on, let's say, the Flagstaff campus on its own, you know, just on its own, it is not profitable. And it hasn't been most of the year. Now, that's not true with our Phoenix operation. Our Phoenix operation, you know, has been cash flow positive this year. So, you know, we are absorbing those costs because the combined consolidated entity, CEHE, has the resources to do that. But we did a couple of things, you know, because of the anxiety that we expected from this strategic evaluation. And to incentivize not only faculty, but, you know, you take people like student services, career services, all the other tutoring support functions at the institutions. And we have, simultaneous with making this announcement that we were going to go through a reevaluation and temporarily cease enrolling new students, we put in place a bonus retention plan for all employees at the campus location. And in simple terms, the way that is structured is, you know, they continue to receive all their regular compensation. You know, faculty still continue to receive, you know, certain bonus plans that were already in place. But if we get to a point in time, and this would probably, you know, could occur in Flagstaff sooner than it would at the Phoenix campus because of the population differential. But if we get to a point where we say, you know, we have this given program and there's no students that we've enrolled for the last couple of mods, therefore, we may not have that first class or two that we need to deliver. And if we had a faculty member who was only qualified and had and historically had only taught maybe one of those two first beginning classes, if we have to separate with that faculty member, they will receive a severance compensation that is tied to their years of tenure, and that can be anywhere from as little as 2 weeks severance to as high as 6 weeks severance, depending on their tenure. But then we've also put in this additional kind of retention bonus program that if we have to separate employment with a faculty member or any member, whether they're career services, student services, or any academic function, that they can receive compensation equal to, and Cindy, you may need to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's up to 5 months of their wages, it's 20% of their annual compensation. So far, at all of our campuses system-wide, we haven't lost any faculty members. We haven't lost any adjunct. We haven't lost any campus directors, deans, career service directors, student services directors. So, you know, our plan, again, as we've said, is we're not closing our campuses. We're just going to do a reevaluation and probably test some new models. And our expectation is that most of our folks, we still have large enough populations to continue delivering all of our education and services, that they'll stick with us as we kind of figure out where we want to go in the future.
Thank you. Looking on your website, I don't see any reference in the Phoenix or Flagstaff location saying that you're not enrolling. How is it that you're putting that out there?
My understanding is on all the website properties, there's no mechanism for anybody to submit in for any information or us to acquire any information for prospective students. So we're not gathering any leads from any of our ground website properties.
So,
but you haven't posted anything that you've stopped enrolling.
Right, I've not seen anything. It says, "Come see what we're all about. Schedule your tour by calling College America at," and there's a phone number, a 602 number, or simply drop in, and it has the location. That doesn't sound to me like a student would know.
Well, I mean, Cindy and Chris can attest to it. I mean, if a student contacts the institution right now, we're not conducting any admissions interviews. We're not having any students come in and do tours, but we could certainly make that more clear on the website. I personally have not looked at exactly what the websites are saying relative to that.
I understand you don't want
my understanding was what
that you know, if it says that you're not enrolling, if that's making people worry, it's shutting down or something, but. It just seems like it's a little bit misleading that you're saying that call or drop by, but really you're not welcome. Bless you. You're not welcome.
Have you shared this information with the students?
Yeah, let's get started with College America.
Yeah, before
4 days.
The moment the moment the notice went out to our staff, we did that, I believe, on Tuesday, September 9th, and on Wednesday, September 10th, a letter was provided to all currently enrolled students informing them that, you know, we're not enrolling new students at this point in time.
So, mentioned, Ms. Sarp, you found a reference that says, come on down, we have a new class.
I'm on collegeamerica.edu.
Mm-hmm.
It says, why, and then down it says, get started with College America. Classes start in 4 days.
Is that specific to Phoenix and Tucson, or just in
general? I just went to their general site, not there. You can pick a campus off of here, off of locations.
Okay, yeah, we just want to make sure your advertising is clear and people don't feel like getting any sort of a bait and switch or anything.
Right. Yeah, I will certainly take a look at all of that again, and I can submit you revised web pages, you know, within the next couple of weeks to make sure that all of that has been sterilized.
But it doesn't sound like you're enrolling, so you're not accepting any application fees or anything like that. But you may still be generating interest in the school and those types of things. Maybe not the Phoenix location or the Flagstaff location, but still the same for UEI or College of America. Okay.
And Chris or Cindy, can you attest to that, you know, since you're there at the campus every day?
Yes, I can.
Do they have to disclose anything on their website? I can't remember. A rule for probation. I thought you did.
No, the accreditor usually
posts. The accreditor usually requires it.
Oh, because it just says it's accrediting commission. Doesn't say anything about probation.
And just make sure that
I haven't been with ACCSC in a few
years. Just make sure that your notice from them, if it states that you have to have that on the website, ensure it's there. Obviously, that doesn't belong to our jurisdiction, but if you if they are requiring you to do it and you don't, you can get in trouble for that. So just, we don't know offhand, but read the.
Yeah, ACCSC requires that we provide a written notification to any prospective student that we're on probation. We provided a copy of that to the agency. I think it was on October 13th. That notice that we've been using since September of last year.
They don't require you to put it on your website?
No, they don't. They say when we first got put on probation, we had to provide a written notice to every active student, which we did, and then provided them evidence to demonstrate that we did provide that written notice to all active students. And then ACCSC requires that you provide written notice to prospective students from that point forward until such time as the institution comes off probation.
Any questions? Great. If whoever updates the website, if you would send notice to Mr. Blanchard and Ms. Stanton, let them know that there's changes and they'll check them out.
Good. We'll provide that.
When do you want them to come back again?
February.
So you'll be asked back again in February, you know, call in or in person to give us an update at that time. And if anything happens in between, forward it to the board.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will. Thank you.
If anybody else, we're going to go right to crediting actions taken for Emory Riddle Aeronautic University. Anyone hear from her? Come on up.
Good morning.
Good morning. If you'd all introduce yourself for the record, and if you have a really humdinger of a last name, spell it for us.
That would probably be me. My name is Brian Meinberg, M-E-I-N-B-E-R-G. I'm Associate Director of State Authorizations and Workforce Development for Embry-Riddle. Joining me here today.
I'm Richard Roach. I am the Associate Vice President for Accreditation at Embry-Riddle.
Greta Payne, Assistant to Dr. Roach.
And I'm not sure, Provost Mueller, are you joining us on the line today?
Yes, I am. This is Alon, L-O-N, Mueller, M-O-E-L-L-E-R, a University Provost at Embry-Riddle.
Who's in charge of making a statement?
I'll make the formal statement. As you know, we're here because we have been placed on a public sanction of warning by our accrediting body. This warning is based on our combined program pathways and their concerns about meeting the total number of required credit hours. We are at this time in the process of awaiting a response from our formal report. We submitted a report to the state here addressing how we've responded to this request from our accrediting body, and we've submitted an amended version of that to you, as well as to the formal report to our accrediting body. In that, basically, the primary concerns were relating to the policies and procedures with regard to how we implement these programs and how we monitor students' progress. There appears to be a little bit of a miscommunication in the initial discussions, where the warning indicates that we have reduced the number of graduate credit hours, and that is inaccurate. We've reduced the number of undergraduate credit hours and replaced those with graduate credit hours. So we're holding our students to a higher academic standard as opposed to a lower academic standard. Upon receipt of this warning, we immediately halted any new admissions to this program, to these combined program pathways within our worldwide campus, so that just out of an abundance of caution to ensure that no students are negatively impacted. However, we do anticipate a positive resolution to this in the December meeting of our accrediting body.
I have to say, I was shocked when I read this, because this is very common. 4+1 programs, 2+3 programs are beyond common. And I was so baffled by it that I actually went to look at a different regional accreditor that I'm more familiar with, who has the, very much the same context of 60 credits associates, 120, blah, blah. But what I noticed the difference between an accreditor that I'm very familiar with and this particular accreditor is that the other accreditor actually has a different section that specifies what this is intended to, and it really does state that an institution may allow well-prepared advanced students to substitute its graduate courses for required or elective courses in an undergraduate degree program and then subsequently count them for the same courses as fulfilling graduate credit. So when I read this, I feel like it was an interpretation where they were very much focused on the numbers of 120 and 30 versus as long as the graduate credits is 30, you're essentially using it as kind of transfer credit. And so
you're absolutely correct.
I know there's something else going on, but I was very confused.
There's really no larger issue at hand here. It really was a matter of, like you indicated, our accrediting body does not have a provision for this, and when the discussion was first had, I think we just did not articulate our processes and procedures in a sufficient way at the time, to where, like I said, it appears that there was a misunderstanding with them where they believed that we were substituting graduate credit hours for undergraduate credit hours, which is not accurate. We're only replacing undergraduate hours with graduate hours, which is why we're so confident in the outcome of this. We've worked with other institutions, hired consultants from other institutions who, as you've indicated, this is a common practice, and addressed how worked with them on how they've addressed it with the accrediting body. And so there, it really is just because there's no provision in their guidelines, we need to be very clear in how we're articulating it to them, and that's what we've done. We've revised several of our procedures and policies internally so that we have better outlined exactly the academic rigor that we hold our students to, how the evaluations are done, and whatnot. So because they don't have a provision, we just needed to do a better job of outlining our processes and procedures so that there's no gray area or ambiguity.
Oh, straightforward one.
When you're working with agencies like us, and you have something a little different than what the rules are set up, and sometimes it's hard to figure out how they apply. So I think that they've had a lot of experience with it. But I'm sure you'll.
Yeah, I completely understand. We operate in 31 states, so we deal with 31 different commissions. So we understand that, you know, we have to address each of your concerns individually. And that's why we opted to, out of an abundance of caution, halt any new admissions. Our home campus and our home state, which is Florida, did not halt admissions because we are operating within our standard guidelines there. But we know that with our extended campus, we have to operate out of truly an abundance of caution when we're dealing with 31 different sets of guidelines and rules. So,
out of curiosity, is it a
common on them to continue to not enroll people until it's all resolved, or is it simply something so common?
They chose to.
I know they chose to. I'm just wondering whether, you know, we're free to release them from it, or they should just stick on this path until it's all resolved.
They have to deal with theirs, but.
For our purposes, at this time, we only have 6 students in the state of Arizona that are enrolled in one of these pathways, and so for us, it was not a huge concern to kind of halt any new admissions into that. At this time, any students that are interested in it can proceed with their studies and opt to join this pathway when this is resolved, if that's their choice.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you for coming and explaining it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Would you like the final resolution to be placed on the board agenda or just reported in the executive director's report?
Since it doesn't sound earth-shattering, how about if they give you the information, if anything rises a concern, then put it on the agenda?
I'll communicate with Ms. Stanfield and Mr. Montaigne. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the next one, Southwest University of Healing Arts.
Actually, Southwest Institute of Healing Arts. It's not university. My name is Casey Miller. I'm the owner, and this is Brad Boutte. He is the director of compliance.
I was reading this and saying, that doesn't go with Sweet Haas. The alphabet soup is mixed up.
We know who we are. We're not a university.
All right, thank you. Would you like to make a brief statement? Well, introduce yourselves and then make a brief statement.
I'm Casey Miller, founder of Southwest Institute of Healing Arts. This is Brad Boutte. He's the director of compliance. So we have been involved with online education for about 9 years, and it certainly has had a changing landscape for us. We're a little surprised with the action that was taken because we voluntarily surrendered this program. We've done that one other time, and it did not have an adverse effect on us. So we're not sure exactly why they chose to have it have an adverse effect when we surrendered it. What happens is that our programs are significantly changing based on the fact that the students that are now available to take online programs have changed so much with the new economy. Those that are now taking online programs have such less ability to succeed because it's kind of like if they're available for an online program, they probably are not as likely to be employed. And that's what we have found. So we've had to significantly change our programs. This is one of the programs that was an original program that we realized needed to be changed in order for us to put in what's called a gate. We realized some students just don't have the grit to do online. So our newer programs have, it's called a grit program, and they have to go through 45 days of simulated training before we accept them as a student. This particular program didn't have it because it was one of our first programs that we originally rolled out. So because of the completion rate, we could see, that they were not performing. We said, we're going to give this program up. The other thing that was happening is that we had 2 programs that were similar. We had introduced a new one, and there wasn't enough market to keep both programs going. So we surrendered it, and as we surrendered it, we then had it, quote, taken away from us, which then resulted in an adverse infection. So it's like, okay, the first time we did it, they didn't do it the second time. Now, I will tell you that we just had our reaccreditation, and it went excellent, and we got a strength for our online education. So I think we're doing pretty good. It just was a technicality.
You just said you can't quit, we fire you?
So it's one of those things. It's an is. It's what they did. When we asked them why they did it this time differently than last time, it was, we're not sure. So I can say it's not a program we're going to continue. We know that we're doing an excellent job with online education, and it will come to you. I think you get a copy of our accreditation review that we'll get in December, and our
curriculum design has been given a strength. Some of it because we now have this GRIT program. GRIT stands for we make sure every student actually has the mindset that is growth-oriented, that they really truly want to grow and that they don't want to just do it for personal development, that they have resiliency, that they have an integrity. The integrity is that do they really plan to do something with this program, and then do they have tenacity. So we have now designed, under the direction of our director of education, who is a psychologist, she's gone in and really looked at resiliency programs. We've taken research from different documented studies of what students have to have grit. So they go through 45 days, and that's part of what it is. And it includes things like, can you upload a file? Can you post every single week the way you're supposed to for 45 days? We don't accept any money from the students for that first time. We don't draw any money down, so that if they don't pass grit, they are not then formally enrolled.
Is the courses they're taking during that 45 days, are they part of the program, or it's just a precursor?
They will be transferred into that program if they are officially enrolled.
And the work that they did counts towards?
It does if they're officially enrolled.
So you have it set up as some sort of a...
It's a gate, a probational gate. It's called provisional enrollment. And what we've found is that those that can't pass that... And so we have some amazing statistics. Now that we have that, we can see that we're retaining a very different amount of students. And it's just that we no longer can assume that the students that are currently enrolling have the ability to be online students.
I think it's one of those things that, in theory, it sounds really good when you actually have to be that disciplined to get all the work.
Very much so.
Not everybody understands. To do online, but actually it's all easy.
Not even, yeah. So we feel really, really encouraged by this whole grit, and what we now have done is we're putting this grit in every one of our online programs, but we're also bringing it on campus as well, just so that we can, we've always been considered a school of integrity, and we write and roll, and this is just our commitment to continue to do that.
And the students understand there's no charge, and there's also no stipends coming to them during that period.
Exactly.
And how does that impact for VA?
You know, I don't even know.
VA has a slightly different time frame because of how they need to be.
I think theirs is 30 days, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head. It's less than 45. But because of the way those hours have to be certified, it's not exactly the same as 45. It's either 14 or 30. I can't remember which.
Because we have so very few online VA students, because they can't get the stipend, it's been nominal affected.
So to make sure you've following the rules for all of the groups that you have to appease.
Yes.
Because, again, we don't want student complaints, right?
No student complaints.
Okay. Our priorities are straight.
Yes.
Anyone else have any questions? That was very clear. Thank you very much, Connie.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
On to licensing. 2019 license renewals with stipulated agreements or accreditation financial concerns. American Intercontinental University. Is anyone here in person? And Ms. Luki is the lead.
Good morning.
Good morning. We also have some folks dialing in as well.
Okay.
Make sure they're on. Okay. Yes. Go ahead. John Klein is on the phone. He's president of AIU.
Okay. Hello, everybody.
And my name is Jill Diatley. I am the vice president of regulatory operations with Career Education Corporation, who is the parent company for AIU.
Okay. And your office in Arizona?
Yes, our main campus is located. I'm based in Chicago, but the main campus is in Arizona for AIU.
Very good. Mr. Klein, welcome. Do you have an opening statement?
Thank you. I think Joe was going to provide the opening statement, and I'm available for any follow-up questions.
We're here today in follow-up for our response to our annual renewal following our first approval in the summer of 2018. We did enter into a stipulated agreement with the board in September. We've complied with all those terms. We've provided the bond. We've been working with Kevin to provide the requested student records. Since the time of the board's original approval, the conditions surrounding the stipulated agreement have been substantially addressed, as outlined in our October 3rd letter. And so we're here to answer any questions you might have about that or any other part of the renewal.
Okay. Thank you. Can you give the board an update on what's going on with HLC?
John, would you like to go ahead and take that one?
Sure, Matt. And also, we had our reaffirmation visit a year ago in May and had a very, very great report. We met all criteria for accreditation with no concerns, and we have no follow-up visits planned in the regular course of our business. The one thing I should be clear about is because we are also in the process of acquiring Trident University, we did have an HLC fact-finding visit in July regarding that proposed transaction. The report was written where the fact-finding team does not make any recommendations, but they did state in the report that it was their view that we met the five approval factors for a change of control of Trident. And HLC, the full board, will take that into consideration here in 2 weeks. I actually think it's 2 weeks from today at their quarterly meeting, November 7th and 8th. And the answer is that the board makes a decision on whether or not they approve that acquisition.
All right, so it was a little garbled, but John, I think what I heard you say is that it's still under consideration. There's a decision pending with HLC.
And that's related to the Trident acquisition, not related to the overall institutional approval.
Okay.
It was a special focus visit because of the request for change of control with Trident, which is actually a merger of that institution with AIU.
So you're not on probation?
No.
Of any kind?
Right. We had a very clean visit in 2018. Okay.
So can you give us an update on this financial year, where you stand? Are you in a good cash position? Are you profitable?
I'll speak to CEC. CEC as a whole is yes to both. Very strong cash position. At the end of last year, we had over $200 million in cash and cash equivalents, $200 million. And overall profitability, we've continued to report that out through our quarterly filings this year. John, I'll let John talk about AIU.
The situation for AIU is similar. And in fact, we've continued to increase our profitability over the last 3 years. The publicly disclosed results have shown strong growth in both enrollments and in profitability. The last publicly available results are as of June 30th, and I believe Tutor Education releases the third quarter results again here on November 7th.
Okay. So, Mr. Klein, on the school that's here in Arizona, can you be more specific as to its profitability during this current year? One reason that the board has had you under a stipulated agreement is because there were two consecutive years of financial losses. So can you address the current year financial situation?
Actually, let me step into CEC. The reason for the stipulation was actually a career education loss. AIU as an institution has actually been profitable for those 2 years. For 17 and for 18, it was a career education loss that was the reason for the stipulation.
Okay. And so staying with that line of response, CEC is profitable through the third quarter?
I can't speak to the third quarter. That's not been released yet. But, yes, through the second quarter of this year we were.
Okay. And to follow up, I do believe that Career Ed has publicly released profitability guidance for the year 2019, and they've they've projected profitability in excess of $100 million for 2019.
Okay, so CEC is projecting to be profitable, and then the Arizona school is also being projected to be profitable?
Yes, the Arizona school has consistently been profitable. Career Education had losses historically, predominantly because of teaching out campuses. We responsibly taught out all of our institutions. In 2017, we did have a net loss predominantly to our La Cordon Bleu closures, which we completed in 2017. And in 2018, we had about a $55 million net income for the calendar for the year, and we're on track to do that, as John's pointed out, in 2019 as well.
Okay, Mr. Tharp, is $55 million okay with you?
Is what?
$55 million profitability okay?
Yeah, it's okay. Well, I'm just looking that they got fined $30 million in the settlement, so that might eat into that a little bit.
Can you speak to your retention rates? The last time you reported, they were a little low.
John,
Sure. Yeah, I can speak to it. Our retention rates have consistently been improving over the last 2 months. I would agree that the numbers that we have in our application look like there's retention challenges. There was clearly a timing issue of the census due to an academic calendar change that we made in early 2017. And so The end of the year reporting at the end of 2018 was overly influenced by a lull in actually students being in scheduled courses because we just didn't have any courses scheduled for them to attend. I can speak to our continuing student retention this year as there's year over year growth as of June of approximately 8% continuing student growth, and then there were also growth in new enrollments as well.
Okay. All right, thank you. One last question for Ms. Dadley. Is CEC planning to close any other campuses this year?
Not that I'm aware of. We've completed all of our teach outs. The last institution on what we call our career school side was closed in December of 2018, so about a year ago. That was the last of those institutions, and so our remaining institutions, which are AIU, its locations, as well as Colorado Technical University, are what remain, and there have been no plans to do that or any announcements.
Okay.
Anyone else have any questions? Are you interested in making a motion?
I am. I'd like to move that we approve their license renewal and without stipulation, without surety bond. I don't see any need for it at this point.
Glenn Thorpe, second.
All right, we have a motion second. Any further discussion?
Without.
Don't make us regret that. Motion and second. Any further discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Glenn Thorpe, aye.
Mike Romano, aye.
Chris Leonard, aye.
Dick Lubke, aye.
Dr. Jennifer Black, aye.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next item on the agenda, Arizona School of Integrative Studies.
Afternoon already.
Morning. Still morning?
Nope, it's not morning anymore. All right. Lead is once again Mr. Lupi.
Okay, I'm on a roll. Welcome. Would you like to introduce yourselves, please?
I would. I'm Shannon Yerke, Chief Exec.
Yes, I am. Ethan Gershon.
For the record, Chairwoman Leonard has recused herself in this matter.
Okay. I'm Shannon Yerke, Chief Executive Officer with Tremontra Education. To my left is Michelle Cordero.
Michelle Cordero, Director of Education.
Laura Todd, Regional Campus Director.
And on the line should be Shannon Bonder. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
She is our Corporate Controller. In regards to an opening statement, this is going to be consistent with the statement provided to some of you that were present during the financial committee meeting in September. For some of you, this will be new information. In spring of 2018, the Kazari Group took majority possession from David Merwin and John Robinson of the group and all of its assets. The assets included a school group that existed in New York, a school group that existed with one campus in Maryland, four campuses and a school group here in Arizona, and another group in Florida that does not work in proprietary education. At that time, Mr. Merwin was retained for his service and was a 20% owner in the organization. In the December 2018 meeting, Asset approved the change of ownership for ASIS specifically. In February of 2019, Mr. Merwin was terminated, and then I was replaced in late February into his role. In March of 2019, the Kazari Group filed litigation against both Mr. Merwin and the former owner, John Robertson, alleging breach of contract, fraud against both seller, and a third claim for breach of fiduciary duties by Mr. Merwin. In March of 2019, for ASIS specifically, an articulation agreement was also comprised with Prescott College, awarding our students here in Arizona the opportunity to advance education upon completion of our program and utilize for value consisting. As well, in April of 2019, we did go through visits with the VA that were successful. In May and June of 2019, our creditor, which is Asset, did visits for our organization. At that time, we worked with them to disclose letter of credit that was provided but not communicated by my predecessor as a CEO with the change of ownership that occurred. That letter of credit was in excess of $845,000. That was a requirement with the change of ownership, and also communicated the litigation that had not been provided notice to Asset or this board at that time against Mr. Merwin and the former partner owner from the Kazari Group. In the August meeting from Asset, the committee put ASIS on a deferment, which was not an adverse action, and wanted follow-up to six specific questions pertaining to the visit. That response is due back to Asset by October 31st, next week, and then they will be reconsidering our extension of accreditation in the December hearings.
Okay, very good. So you've had quite a cloud over the school since Mr. Merwin left, but you seem to be kind of coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for providing the board responses to our questions. It seems like a lot of them are still somewhat up in the air, though, with Asset. Would that be a safe conclusion?
In regards, I wouldn't paraphrase it that way. So this board is aware the East Coast entities that were previously part of the portfolio were under different OPE IDs and different DUNS numbers. So any adverse action that was sustained from those organizations had no impact on ASIS because they operate under different OPE IDs and DUNS numbers. Additionally, we've obtained teach-out approval and have closed two entities in the Maryland school, and we've closed one of our New York schools responsibly and appropriately. And next week, we will be shuttering the final school in the portfolio that exists in New York through with Asset's blessing in regards to our teach-out plans and so forth. It is we are also all going to be in attendance for their conference in November, and it's our belief that the adequate responses that we're going to provide back to Asset and four to six questions that were brought up on the site visits will be more than appropriate to be awarded reaccreditation in our portfolio. And if you compare this to previous findings, this was and reauthorizations, if for ASIS specifically, this is the lowest number of findings on a site visit that has ever occurred. And previously, we've been through this process with ASIS where we have put in place on a deferment action, asked to answer additional questions, and then been granted three-year reauthorization of the accreditation. So this isn't abnormal or inconsistent with historical aspects relating specifically to ASIS.
Okay.
And just for the record, the last level of findings from ASIS with a deferment and then ultimately a reauthorization was 16 findings. We only had six, two of which were predominantly about communication in regards to the letter of credit, which protects the students, as well as the litigation against the former ownership. And there was a confusion because even through assets policy, we're not a defendant in it. We placed the litigation against it. So some of the communication of what should have been disclosed is also part of our response back. It wasn't if we were trying to hide it. The technicality of the language from counsel didn't indicate specific disclosure, specific asset per their documents.
Okay. All right. Having served as an accrediting board member, deferments aren't handed out lightly. It's because the institution failed to provide sufficient evidence to support the standard that they're citing you for. So you're making great progress. I mean, from 16 to 6 is...
We can do better. But
yeah, and they will obviously require you to do so. Can you speak a little bit about your financial status?
Yeah, we've submitted financial statements that were updated to you yesterday. To Terry or the other day. Shannon Bonder, do you want to speak to anything specifically on the financials, or does the board want any specific questions answered in regards to those financials? I guess I want to kind of see what would you like for us to kind of disclose?
The ones I'm looking at are still showing a loss, so.
Shannon, do you want to speak to the financials currently?
Sure. I resent the two quarters to Terry yesterday because over the last several months, because of the new ownership, they filed an extension to do the tax returns for 2018. They just submitted those last month, and we are currently under our annual audit. So we're working currently on that because that's due October 31st. So the numbers have changed since I've sent those to you. They actually do look a little better than they did, and that's due to, again, our CPA working with the numbers and with the audits that are occurring right now. Those are not finalized yet, but they will be again at the end of the month. I can speak to any specific questions you might have.
Yeah, would you mind telling us how much cash you have on hand?
Sure. In our operating accounts today, in our portfolio, we have $75,000 as of this morning when I checked.
And just for the record, in regards to the financial stability of the organization, through this transition of us shuttering schools and operating and loaning money from, obviously, organizations, our ownership group has made multiple infusions and has showed financial backing to weather the storms to ensure not only the appropriate and compliant closures and reimbursement of any student aid to individuals, but also the operations of all locations. And our enrollment portfolio has been growing and been strong throughout the course of last year and consistent and sustaining through this year. So we're very confident with once we obviously shutter and kind of come through this situation on the East and then our reauthorization that will continue to improve our financial stability and health. And even our operating account balance that was indicated by Ms. Bonder this afternoon has improved from our last fiscal meeting that we had a month ago in September, even dramatically there. So I think we're showing signs of improvement in moving our way through this.
Okay. So I want to address an issue regarding the group that owns your school, Trumantra.
Correct. Well, I mean, with Trumantra Education, then the ownership group is the Kazari Group. Trumantra is the entity that operates the ASI, or is the formulation of schools that consist of ASIS, CMSM, FLSM, and a school in Florida that does lymphatic studies called ACLS.
OK. Okay. So Trumantra still needs to get registered in the state of Arizona as a foreign entity. So that's, I want to leave here today and put that on somebody's to-do list. Please. Thank you. All right. Board, do you have any questions for the panel?
Yeah, I'm trying to appreciate the $75,000, how you talked about infusions coming in as well. How frequent have those been? Like, what has that been over the last year in regards to that? And are you expecting, if at all, the next infusion?
Yeah, so overall in the portfolio, in regards to 2019, there's been over $250,000 that has been allocated into the school group in Tremont Education. In regards to my communication with the ownership group, obviously any time that we come in a position where cash flow doesn't meet standards, we allocate. It has occurred typically earlier in the year in the quarters, and we've been able to, in this last quarter, meet our financial obligations without the infusion into the portfolio. But it is a mechanism that can be requested when needed from the ownership group in Kazari.
You're on a positive swing now. As you look into the calendar year, Q1, Q2, is that a higher time of enrollment for you and start?
Yeah, so historically, and like many of the schools here, seasonality will occur. So the early budgets in January, February are consistently some of our strongest budgets within the year. By that time, all of the operations in the East will have been shuttered, and full resources and the looking of expansion and reauthorization through asset coming in December, notification late December, should put us on a pathway to post very strong numbers with ASIS in the fiscal 2020 calendar year.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, good news and the bad news. Good news is you're making great progress. Bad news is that there's still a cloudy sky hanging over the school. The good news is I want to make a motion to approve their license with a stipulated agreement that their surety bond, post a surety bond of $106,834, that you provide the board electronic copies of student records quarterly. You'll have another chance at the next quarter to come before the board, so that's a bonus, right?
Always.
Doesn't want to see us.
Can I ask a clarifying question about the electronic records?
Yes.
What exactly do you want included in that?
That
package.
Kevin, I'll
provide you with the information that you need. It's going to be your ledger cards, your transcripts, and I'll get you the rest of it.
And we're. The portfolios that used to, we did this in Arizona, or sorry, Maryland as well, working with their state boards, providing electronic documentation. So it shouldn't be an issue.
Okay. And then, so yeah, kind of interrupted in mid motion here. That's okay. It's a test to see if I can still remember what, you know, where I'm at. We do require that Trumantra get registered as a foreign entity with the state of Arizona.
Okay.
That'd be part of it. And then any communication with asset that comes down between now and the end of the year, you need to forward to the staff. All right. Do you agree to those stipulated terms?
We do.
Okay.
I'll second your.
Okay. So, thank you, Dr. Leck, as a second. Are you? I'm making the motion, so you're seconding.
I'm seconding.
Any discussion? All right, I'll call for the question.
Glenn Thorpe, aye.
Mike Romano, aye.
Dick Liebke, aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, aye.
All right, the motion carries. All right, keep doing good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back. All right. Next item on the agenda. Review of program reports for Brighton College. Right?
Mm-hmm. We is it Brighton is up next?
Brighton.
It's a vocational program license renewal.
On the 2019 regular.
Arizona license renewal stipulated agreements or accreditation financial concerns for Brighton Health.
Yeah.
Wrong page.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Friends, wrong page. Thank you.
This is my.
As well.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you.
Just think in a short while you'll get to go to lunch. Would you like to introduce yourselves, please?
Sure. Gail Dorada, Vice President of Academic Affairs for Brighton College and Compliance Officer Curriculum. And with me is Sean Dixon, Director of Student Services. He's also a liaison that works closely with the president and the CFO, as well as the accountant for Brighton College.
Is there anyone on the phone?
No.
No, just the two of you?
Just two of us.
Do you have an opening statement?
We do. First of all, we wanted to express our deep appreciation to the board here present for, as you've known, we went from ad delivery when it came to our curriculum and our academics correspondence institution to having our online delivery as well as having proprietary LMS. We did that for a few years, and we went from really having concerns from our accrediting body on all 12 standards. A year ago, in our last reaccreditation visit, we also sent a report, an update on everything that we were doing internally, and we are quite proud of the institutional effectiveness and the application that we've done throughout the last year, to the point that now we only have two standards left, one of which we actually also advised the accrediting body that we needed a little more time, which happens to be Standard 3 that has to do with our program maps, because we wanted to include thoroughly the different lifelong learning tenets of civil engagement and everything else that the body was actually requesting. And on many of these areas, we've also seen the reaccreditation process go smoothly after that, as well as meeting the standards. Internally, we know that we have a deadline by December 1st with our accrediting body to submit not only Standard 3 with the MAPS, as well as our financial information and fiscal responsibility by that date.
Okay. So DEAC wants to see these answers by December this year?
Correct.
All right, and then they'll make a determination?
Correct.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about the financial status of the school. Can you give us a picture of your strength, weakness, where you're at in this calendar year?
So this calendar year, we're actually, our revenue is up 32%, and our expenses are actually up 1.2%. So okay. We maintain the same expenses we had in 2018, through 2019 while increasing our revenue. We project at the end of the year we should break even, which will be a huge party for Brighton.
Okay.
So that's where we're at.
Okay. So that's progress.
That is huge progress.
Very much so.
Get back to black ink, right? All right, very good. Questions?
It's good progress. Want to see it in the positive, though, in the black.
Mr. Tharp likes millions. So
millions.
He's kind of fond of that. So. All right. Well, I think you're making good progress. Dr. Leck, any questions? I want to overlook you.
Thank you, though.
All hearts clear. I think it's going to be best to continue where we have you right now. Looks like you're making sufficient progress. You should hear something from DEAC in the first quarter of next year. So I'm going to make a motion to grant a renewal, but I'd like that motion to include that you maintain your surety bond. I believe it's $103,000.
Right.
Do you agree to those terms?
We do.
Okay. That's my motion. I need a second.
I'll second. We have competition for a second there.
Okay. I may have missed something. Just a moment.
Quarterly report.
They're on a stipulated agreement to continue the student educational records and
okay.
reporting.
And quarterly reporting, right. Okay. Yeah. And you'd like to do that, wouldn't you?
Of course. Okay.
All right.
I'll second those two.
Okay, so we have a full motion now.
Full seconded.
We have a full second.
You didn't introduce yourself, just for the
record. Oh, geez. Dr. Jennifer Legg, second.
Is that what I'm supposed to do? That doesn't sound right. All right, we have a motion second. Any further discussion? All those in favor? Aye by roll call vote. And say your name.
Glenthorpe, aye.
Mono, aye.
Chris Leonard, aye.
Dick Lipke, aye.
Like my first day, Dr. Jennifer Legg, aye.
All right, passes. Thank you. Continue your trend.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, keep it going.
Can you please your name for the record?
Problem, Terry. Thank you so much.
All right. The next school is Juilliard College, and just to mix things up, you're not in charge.
Say what?
Mr. Romano.
I like that.
She got to do most of his all in a row.
Very good. Yeah,
I get to go.
Now you leave.
Folks at the table could introduce yourself to the record, and if your name is difficult, please spell it for us.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead.
My name is Angela Paul. I'm the Director of Compliance for UEI College and International Education Corporation.
Krista Jones. I'm the Campus President for UEI College.
Can you spell Jones for us? That might be hard.
Yeah.
Sanjay Sarjana. Last name is spelled S-A-R-D-A-N-A. I'm the CFO for IEC.
Would someone like to make a statement?
Go ahead. Just to give you guys a brief recap, International Education Corporation acquired the UEI College campus back in 2014. And as part of that acquisition, along with the Florida schools, the Texas campus, one of the things we wanted to do was make sure that we standardize all the UEI campuses across the board. And with the Phoenix campus, one of the things that we did was standardize the mission, the curriculum, the programs, the name of the school. And here we are back as of 2018 through 2019, now working on program revisions. And we've discontinued a few programs. And we're here to answer the board's question.
I'm the lead. Thank you very much. And would you mind bringing this up to speed a little bit on asset and where that stands currently with some of the concerns around the programs?
Yeah, sure. So we received our asset accreditation back in 2018. And the computer and network technician program, we paused enrollment. And we paused enrollment towards the middle of 2018. ACET is aware of the fact that we paused enrollment. However, because we still had students in the program, as of today, there's no students left, but because we still had students in the program when we submitted our annual report of May 2019, the program didn't meet benchmark for placement, and as a result, ACET had to put the program on probation status. It's not an institutional probation status. It's a programmatic probation status, and we don't have any students in the program right now because the program is undergoing curriculum review.
And then you also had some particular programs under benchmark as well.
Yes, that's correct. So as with the standard process, whenever an institution does not meet its outcomes for an annual report, the accreditor will require interim reporting. Interim reporting isn't the official reporting status. It's just they want to know how are you doing for the first graduating month for particular programs, how are you doing for the second month. And so that's all we're doing right now, just giving them progress reports.
So could you bring us up to speed on that? It looks like you'll have a submittal here at the end of this month anyways to them.
Yeah, that's correct. So October 31st, we have an interim progress report due to ACET. The issue hasn't really been our placement outcomes for programs such as medical assistant, medical front office and billing, and the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning program. The issue has mostly been with completion, but our placement outcomes have been doing pretty well.
So let me ask it a different way. Are you meeting all the benchmarks necessary in your submittal?
Absolutely. So by the time we submit our interim progress report, we would have achieved improvement. We may not actually meet benchmark, but we will plan to meet benchmark by the official submission of our annual report in May of 2020.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like what you're going to submit to them is going to be under benchmark, hopefully with good progress, right, that they see that.
Yes.
And working towards that May reaccreditation, essentially, date that you believe you'll be in positive numbers.
Correct, correct.
Okay.
And if I may add, the creditor does not take adverse action on unofficial progress reports. They wait until our submission of May 2020 to see how we've progressed.
Okay. And how low below the benchmarks are you currently right now?
So for completion, it's literally, the benchmark is 67%. And as far as what we provided to the accreditor last year, we've only missed for a few programs by 1%. In some instances, we were below by probably 4 or even 5%, which is why we're pretty confident that by the time we submit our official report in 2020, we would achieve benchmark.
And the cohort in each one of those?
It's a calendar year cohort, so it's January to through December, and so when we submit it of next year, it'll be for 2019 calendar year.
Okay, and how many students in that cohort?
I don't have the specific count in front of me. I just have the roughly percentages.
Minus 20, 100, 50?
About 200.
200? Okay, all right. It just gives me a feel of the percentage, kind of the barometer, and how many students we're ultimately talking about as well. So thank you for that. Really it for me. If there's any other questions?
No, I wanted to know what their improvements were.
Have any other?
Nothing else?
Are you interested in making a motion?
Yes, I am. Keep us moving along. So thank you very much for being thorough in your documentation as well. So I'd like to make a motion in regards to approving the license renewal for UEI College. With the surety bond being increased respectfully to the $365,129, and that you continue to provide student records quarterly.
All right. We have a...
Glenthorpe, second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Do you agree to the stipulations?
Yes.
All in favor, roll call vote.
Glenthorpe, aye.
Mike Romano, aye.
Trish Leonard, aye.
Dick Liebke, aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, aye.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to have a slight change in the agenda. If we could have Wizard Education come up next. It should be short, so that will fit in for us to be able to be done for our break at 1 o'clock. We've all accept that as a challenge. See if we get this done in 8 minutes.
We are up for it.
Mr. Thorpe?
Would you like to please introduce yourself for the record by name?
Hi, my name is Fred Killingbeck. I'm the one of the owners and the former president and CEO.
I'm Beth Wichman, and I'm the executive director.
Carl Lind, one of the owners and current president CEO.
Would you like to make any statement before we start? Just keeping in mind, just so we can focus, that last time there was a lot of concern about the financials because they were showing a significant loss, and was kind of unclear to us as a board about how you were going to keep going and such like that.
Sir, yes, sir. We can address that, and then also the surety bond and the refund policy, anything else that I think that's already been sent by Beth.
The refund has been corrected, as I saw in the catalog, so that was fine.
Okay.
I read the financial recovery report, I guess it was, what, in 2019?
Yes.
And it seems sound. It did say that people were not taking salaries. Is that correct?
Sir, yes, I've got a statement here that, if if I could, I could read and hopefully.
Yeah, please.
Okay,
please.
Great. Thank you. Well, we've been in business since 2003, actually, as a company. And I know that we've just been dealing with the board here since 2015, I believe. And the first 12 years that we were in business, we showed yearly profits, eight of those 12 years. And overall in those 12 years, even with the 4 years of losses, we still profited somewhere in the neighborhood of $250,000. Sorry it wasn't any millions, but you know, we gave it our best shot.
Yeah, okay. We did.
And then 2013 through 2017, we actually incurred a whole great deal of expense going through the accreditation process. In order to get our paramedic program accredited, we had to go through ABHES, you know, a national academic accreditation, and then the paramedic program. So that took a lot of time and money. Our thought was that the programs, the paramedic programs and the rest of the programs that we do, would kind of recover that cost. Well, in 2016, we had one really good cohort, and then we had one really lousy one. And then 2017, both the cohorts we had were less than 14 students each time. So it just, it didn't even pay for itself, to be quite honest with you, and consequently didn't allow us to make any money, and had a lot of expenses with the accreditation, also buying some equipment and such. So our losses in 2017, where you were asking about wage cuts, etc. Our losses in 2018 were about 25% less than they were in 2017, and a lot of that has to do with cost-cutting measures that we took. We discontinued phone reimbursement for our members. We discontinued per diem allowances for out-of-town expenses for our students and for the staff. Check that, not the students, for our instructors and the staff. We did a lot of strategic planning, a little bit more implementing of strategy when it came to sending instructors, et cetera, out of town, and reduced our hotel spending. We discontinued our health care insurance for the staff. We did a lot of work on our website to kind of eliminate any type of or eliminate a lot of extra work that was needed by people and staff members. Probably one of the biggest ones, changes that we made was we eliminated one full-time salary administrative person, so that cut about $50,000 a year out of that. We did not hire anybody else to take that position. We assigned a lot of the tasks. We just dispersed the tasks to the rest of us in the organization so that we ended up that we didn't have to replace that person. Let's see.
How many starts a year do you have?
Excuse me, sir?
How many starts a year do you have?
Two.
Yes. You start twice a year. You do two paramedic classes a year.
Spring and fall, yes.
And I read in your data that the October 19 and everything was looking up. What's that mean? How many people are in that?
Yes, sir. Currently we have 22 people, I think, in the current cohort that's going now. We've interviewed and accepted right at 20 people for the next cohort that starts in 2 weeks, actually. That's really looking good. We still have others to interview, so we're looking at a pretty good enrollment for the fall cohort.
How does that compare to last year?
Oh, incredibly bad.
It's about twice.
Yeah.
So, for all intents and purposes, 2019, we look to go back into the black, right?
We'll be in the black.
Yeah, correct.
The
black. We're in the black right now by maybe $10,000 on a cash basis, but when you look at accounts receivable, we're over $100,000, plus we have the cohort that's starting in 2 weeks. Like I say, that'll bring in a lot of cash. Yeah.
your students are cash pay, correct, as I remember, even though you weren't accredited. I remember you told me you wanted nothing to do with the financial aid a couple years back or a few years ago.
And the VA also. So.
And VA, you're approved by the VA for funding to get that done. Any plans to offer any other programs besides the paramedic?
We offer other and non-vocational, I guess, if you will. We have American Heart Association courses like CPR and advanced cardiac and pediatrics and that type of stuff. So, and that also supplements our paramedic program. We do recertification programs for EMTs and paramedics all over the state.
Run ACLS and thousands.
Correct. Yes. Yes.
All right.
So, yeah, we've also focused on trying to get more students and more attendance in the ACLS and PALS and ELS classes.
How do you market?
Mostly our website. And quite honestly, we have a really good reputation here in the state of Arizona.
Yeah, you do. I'm well aware. You guys do have a good reputation.
Yes.
Students, too, our former students, they bring us.
By referral?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just because I worry about, I don't know if there's any big cash infusions you can get from anywhere. So it's really going to be, your success is going to be predicated on doing this. And again, as a consumer protection agency, we don't want a paramedic class to be halfway through, you guys run out of money and say, I can't do anything with you. And then they come back here. Okay. So that's where it was. So I appreciate the data you provided. I'm a lot clearer than I was last time you were here.
And I apologize for not attending last time.
Madam Chair, Ms. Stansfield, the surety bond is 29454, and
you submitted.
You have it
prior to that was the amount that you talked about it, and they just decided to go ahead and post it.
Great. Thank you for doing that ahead of time. That's good. I have no further questions at this time.
I was just going to ask, part of your plan, too, and it sounds like you're moving in all the right directions, so 1 and 3 on your plan list, check the boxes on paying down the debt. How's that coming along for you? Do you have plans for that? How is that coming along against your plan?
Slow but sure. yes, we've been able to, work at that, and that's, again, one of the other things that we're looking at with this next cohort is we're going to put more towards the debt. And honestly, right now at this point in history, we're probably right at the 1-to-1. And so we anticipate by the end of this year to be well above, more assets than liabilities.
Great. Thank you.
Just a point of clarification, Madam Chair, is Wizard on financial reporting quarterly? In records as well?
Nope.
Okay. I'm prepared to make a motion that we approve the, is it regular? Sorry, just something. The regular vocational program license for Wizard Education with the following stipulations. That you maintain the surety bond in the amount of $29,454, which you provided, and that you continue on quarterly financial reporting with this board.
You accept the stipulations?
Mike Romano, second.
I'm getting hungry. You can see it. Right there. Question. Do you want one?
Figure we do the procedural thing.
We'll help you out. She's not getting hangry. She's getting slap happy.
Proper order.
Now you've gotten there yet.
Call for a question.
Any other questions? Discussion? All right. All those in favor?
Glenn Thorpe, aye.
Mike Romano, aye.
Your son and aye.
Dick Lipke, aye.
Dr. Jennifer Leck, aye.
Right. Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you. So we're just going to take about a 20-minute break. So we'll see you back here in about 20 minutes. Thank you.
Come out.
Somebody brought you one.
No, he said he was going to bring one when we went.